be able to wrestle it down.
Good morning. It is 9:09 a.m. on Wednesday, December 6th, 2017. I will call the Dallas City Council briefing meeting to order. We will begin with an invocation, and then I'll lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Our invocator this morning is Reverend Eric Folkerth. He's been the senior pastor of North Haven United Methodist Church in Miss Gates District. I've gotten the opportunity to visit his church since 2001. He's an avid blogger, published author, and a musician. He's a social activist and interfaith work and was the recipient of the humanitarian award at the Dallas Black Tie Dinner. He has led and co-led hundreds of persons on mission trips to Mexico, Haiti, Russia, Nepal, and he's worked on over 10 Habitat for Humanity homes, worked in Bonton, and he's married to Judge Denise Garcia, a state district judge. It's great to have you here, Reverend. All rise. Thank you.
Gracious and loving God, we give you thanks for these servants around this circle. We give you thanks for the hours and hours that they put into their work, both here in this building and in their districts. We give you thanks for the sacrifices they make that the public will never see and could never understand. The many nights they have spent in meetings in their districts listening to the stories of neighbors instead of the stories of their own children and partners. And so, God, we give you thanks for the sacrifice of their families, too. We give you thanks for all the city staff here and in this building who keep our city running well. God, during these winter months, many of your great world religions celebrate festivals of light overcoming darkness, Hanukkah, Diwali, solstice, the tender and peaceful candles of a Christmas Eve church. And so, God, in this season of light, may these servants be your light in your city. Give them the light of wisdom, that they may wisely work together, God, even with diverse neighborhoods and interests. And may they never forget that they can accomplish great things so long as no one worries about who gets the credit. May you continue to give them the light of justice, the light of compassion. And may you be with them in all their public and private deliberations. And then, compassionate one, when they have finished this meeting, when they have finished this term, forgive them for all they will have left undone and unfinished. Forgive them for the times when the all too human dangers of pettiness and pride have stood in their way. Forgive them and give them the strength to rise again as your servants and your dear children. And finally, God, we thank you for this great city, for the many ways all of us love and serve it, for the beautiful souls who live here, for the races, nationalities, sexual orientations, gender identities of all your people, for the beautiful tapestries of religions here, for the many diverse and political ideals, and for Dallas's beautiful, creative, and progressive heart. For all these things, we give you thanks and ask these in your holy and gracious name. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend. Appreciate you being here. We have one special presentation this morning. Mayor Pro Tem Carraway has a chance to honor some folks.
You know, I'm since he turned music on just for a little bit while I'm talking, then turn it off after I get through. Turn it up just a little bit. I'm getting to the spirit. This is the season for giving, and let me just say the Lord leads me and everyone that I'm honoring to do the right thing. It is not for publicity. It is from all of our hearts for those that are less fortunate. And we have been doing this now for 9 years, and it just gives me great pleasure to to be here to thank those that helped us, that volunteered their time and their dollars and all of their support to make other people happy. When you look at it, this was a couple of weeks ago on the 19th, I believe it was, the week before Thanksgiving. And when you hear people come to you that are, they go to Thanksgiving dinner every year with their family, and some of them don't have anything to do but to come because they have nothing to bring to the table. And when you hear a person say, look, you know, I've been away. I go to my family every year. I've been incarcerated. Now I have an opportunity to bring the turkey to the family dinner. When you hear things like that, that just cranks me up and cranks all of us up. So with that being said, this is going to play. There's no talking in it, but we'll just talk over the music while we recognize. And I'm not going to be very long, but I want to say, what you said, huh? I hear you. He said, well, you know, I'm the one that's off topic all the time around here. I was voted Mayor Pro Tem off topic. That's my name. Did that while I was out of town. Let me recognize some folks. And when I recognize these folks, and the mayor told me who some of y'all were too. I want y'all to know that. We couldn't have done this, first of all, without my staff. And I want Norma and Lydia, you guys come forward. Come on. You keep taking pictures, but you need to come out here. And Norma, you come over here. Because to put up with me, Mayor, and to the council, you got to really be talented. And I give, I say amen. I get all amens, y'all, you know, every one of them. But I want to personally recognize you guys and tell both of you thank you. I give Norma migraine headaches, and literally, she still puts up with me and all the different things that I put on her plate. And I want to just tell you, look in your eyes and tell you thank you. And I want to thank you, Lydia, because you brought professionalism to my office, okay, along with Norma, and you two are the very best, okay? So you got more work to do. So no, we're going to do that. I want to first off say to Walmart, and tell you all about Walmart. Had not been for Walmart, and I'm talking about all of Walmart, but I'm talking about the Walmart at Glen Oaks Crossing and its manager and staff at Glen Oaks Crossing specifically. All the things that you all have done, all the hoops that you all have jumped through, all the turkeys and the hams and all of the things and the fixings and the recognition that you all have done from your heart. It goes beyond the store because you all are the community's store. And you're my number one store, and you happen to be the number one store in the region. So that makes it even greater. But Corey and the team, you all please stand up and come forward. And I want you all to know they go overboard. They don't just give us this. They come and they physically work, put up their signage, do everything. And just on behalf of all of us, I want you all to know, I personally and this city council and the city of Dallas, we appreciate and salute Walmart. Every time I'm in the store, you all treat me so well. This is where I get my medicine. This is where I shop. This is where I encourage other folks to shop. And we are number one. Okay, but I want you all to hang this and keep this. For everybody, we're going to have some individual presentations to you, but corporately, I want you all to know that we appreciate and love Walmart on Short Street, okay, and all over. And I want to spill a special shout out to Kelly, so Kelly can know that. Okay. So y'all just stand right over a little bit because I got some more folks. You can't do this without proper communication, and when it comes to proper communication, you got to be able to get the word out in there. And when you're getting the word out, you got to have the radio station.
Guys, Mr. Caraway's got the microphone. Speak into the microphone.
Okay.
Mr. Caraway,
all right. You can't do this without the radio station. And there's been only one radio station that every time, not just when I call, but every time the city of Dallas call on any community event, wherever it is, you can always call on Radio 1. So I want you all to know that Radio One is our radio station, the city's radio station. Any announcements that we have, they can be in Pleasant Grove, they can be in North Dallas, they can be wherever we need to have them. Radio One always steps up to the plate. They've been with us now for 9 years. And I want you guys from Radio One, Aaron, you guys come on up. You all, let's please recognize them for the annual 9th year. And once you all know, take this over to the radio station, put it on the wall, tell Red I did the right thing, okay?
You all understand right there, Radio One. We can't do it without you.
One guy came to me a few years ago, Mayor, and because we had been doing this and were so successful, he said himself that this is something that he wanted to volunteer, Mark, and get involved in. This is what he said. I mean, he didn't say, hey, give me this and I'll do that. He said, what can I do? Because this thing warms my heart. And he stepped up to the plate. Not only do we give away the turkeys and the hams, but he has a barbecue place called Gator Pit Barbecue, some of the best barbecue in the world, right across the street from Lancaster High School Football Stadium in Lancaster. And he steps up to the plate, and he brings his entire staff out. And while we're giving away the turkeys, he's feeding 1,000 people. That we have tables and chairs and out front of Big T. And he does it without any charge or any cost. He does it from his religious heart. Gator, you and your daughter, you all come up, Gator, David. Gator Pit Barbecue. When I tell you the barbecue is good, all you got to do is look at me. Gator, I want to really thank you and your family, your daughter, and everybody as it relates to Gator Pit Barbecue. You guys step up to the plate in a major way. And you're doing it every year, and you're doing it from your heart. You do not charge. You do not get paid. You bring all of it, your staff, your steam tables, the whole 9 yards. And we put those tables up, and folks are able to come and eat that don't have an opportunity to do so regularly. So thank you all. Y'all just keep going over here now. Get over here. We're going to take a picture in just a minute. You know, when you're doing this kind of stuff and really thanking people, you have to do this kind of deal. We chose to have this, as you can see, at Big T. Why at Big T? Well, I'm gonna stay right in the middle of where the action is. And Big T Bazaar at one point had a negative, but we've taken Big T from a negative to a community positive. And it's a community destiny where folks go and they actually shop in this mall. And every single year, Keith Song, and Keith is not here, but we're going to still recognize Big T because this is where we have it every year. They don't charge us. They allow Gator to come in with his food while they're selling food on the inside for a living. They allow us to be able to give away food while they're in there selling food. So, you know, when you look at it and they allow us to come every single year, they have been a major partner with us at Big T Bazaar right across from Glen Oaks Crossing. So y'all give it up for Big T. All right, well, we got the motorcycle club. Now, where are they? Did they park? It was about 40, they was on their way. We got about 40 motorcycles. And when the motorcycle club, and they'll be here, when they come in here, they'll have all their iron and all that stuff on. Y'all, you saw them outside? All right, so they're coming in. Let me just tell you before they get in here. They came to me, and they said, look, what can we do? This thing is growing only because it's natural. They said, what can we do? We say, well, we need some help in just volunteers and making sure that we kind of secured and we got things going properly. So not using our Dallas police, we and they're not the police, but they're the motorcycle people that wear all this stuff, and they're trying to get me to ride a motorcycle. I'm not going to do that. I told them I would give me a trike. But at the end of the day, they, and that's Gator when y'all see all the people out here eating. At the end of the day, the motorcycles, they will meet and they escort the U-Haul through the streets with all of the turkeys to make sure that the turkeys arrive. They park their bikes, they get out and they volunteer and they help us make this thing so successful. So when Mr. Butcher comes, tell him I've already talked about it, but we'll get a chance to to recognize him. But let's recognize the motorcycles. We have our code compliance that participate with us, and we have our senior services, Ms. Hooper, that participate with us, Kelly Price, that participates with us, and we do have our Dallas Police Department. So if all three of you all can come representing our city services, Dusty the Dumpster was on his way and fell off the back of the truck on the freeway. I want y'all to know that. Now, it was just the uniform that fell off. So it was, Dusty hadn't got dressed yet. But they had to turn around on 35 and go get Dusty. And when Dusty did arrive, the Big T, he was Dusty when he got there. I want you all to know that. But I want you all to know, we certainly appreciate everything that you all do and everything that you all will continue to do. And this senior services, this code. Thank you all. This is for our Dallas Police Department. Where? Come on, Chief Pugh. Come on up here, Chief. Yeah. My main man, Mr. Chief Pugh.
My chief is coming.
I have one more set of volunteers, and then I'm gonna kind of cut it a little bit. Chief, stay up here for a picture. I'm going to take a picture. Yeah, you're not undercover, are you?
No.
Okay, good.
I'm not the little mascot.
Oh, okay. All right. I have two guys that work very hard with me, and they are. I don't know why I see them in the orange right here. That's Carter and Steve. And I don't know why people choose to put up with me, but I don't pay them, and they don't get paid either. that's a concern that they have most of the time, that they don't get paid. But Carter, I want you to come, and Steve is not here. But Carter, he runs my office, and he'll run my district office as well. But when I tell you, I could not have been so lucky to have a volunteer such as Gregory Carter. He's been in politics forever. He's been at the state legislature forever, and he's here. And I'm glad to have you in my office. I got some work for you to do when we get through, though. I want you to know that. But I want you to personally have this, and we have one for Steve as well, okay? So we want to get that to you. Thank you. Did I miss anybody that's here? Okay, since I didn't miss anybody that's here, one, I'm going to ask us to please just take a picture with these folks. I want to thank Adam Adrana personally.
Thank you.
Because Adam, during the Thanksgiving turkey giveaway, He assisted and helped, and I want to thank Tanel. I always want to thank Tanel because Tanel is always there having his little turkey. He be competing, trying to get as many turkeys as he possibly can, trying to match my number. But if the council would please join us to recognize these folks for all their hard work, let's give them a round of applause for their volunteer work. Come on, let's turn around. Don't forget about the radio. Don't forget about the barbecue. Don't forget about Walmart. Whatever you do, don't forget about Walmart. Whatever you do, don't forget about the radio. Whatever you do, don't forget about this. This is the best manager right here in the whole wide world. They get rid of him, they got to deal with me.
I think the agenda starts in like a day.
Okay. All right, guys. I appreciate y'all.
Sure.
You all right? Where the motorcycle is?
Good morning.
Right there.
Oh, there you go.
I'll never offer again. I made that mistake once.
With that, Ms. Johnson, we'll take our morning speakers. Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you. Good morning. Your morning speakers will be as follows: Kendrick Mobley, A.J. Lewis, and Richard Miles. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, or profane and slanderous remarks will be removed from the room. Individuals allow 3 minutes to speak. You notice the timer at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop and address your comments to Mayor Rawlings only. Your first speaker, Kendrick Mobley.
Good morning.
Good morning,
everybody. I'm here to talk to you about a transitional house we started in Oak Cliff. We had a problem. Next door to our house was a drug house that was there that I had to talk to and work on these guys and shutting the house down. A couple weeks later, they came back and shot at our house. So, you know, I went over next door. I had a conversation with them about what was going on, and they eventually shut the house down and moved on. But I really wanted to talk to Mayor Pro Tem Caraway about helping him with the program that he's rolling out to help the youth. That's very important to me in this community. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm not from Dallas, so this community is kind of different. Oak Cliff is a challenge for me, but I'm definitely up for the challenge. I have experience with federal and local law enforcement for the Department of Homeland Security and TSA. I worked alongside federal and local law enforcement to stop a lot of things, and I think I could be an asset to this council and this city in helping to stop this problem. That's about it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Passing
yes, question. Mr. Thomas.
Okay. I didn't find out the location or anything, so we know what district it's in.
It's in Mayor, excuse me.
So it's in District 4.
Yes, in District 4, yes.
All right. Thanks.
Sorry.
Your next speaker, A.J. Lewis.
All right. I'm assuming you are Kevin Felder, right?
Sir, speak to me.
Okay, but he's a city council. Why can't I speak to him?
No, you only speak to the mayor in this time.
Okay. So I noticed there's two sides of Dallas. You got the north side and you got the south side.
And put your thanks, just closer. There we go. Thank you.
Okay. I noticed there's two sides of Dallas. There's a north side and there's an east side. South side. And you live up there on the north side. Quality of life is pretty good for you. So what is your agenda for the black community on the south side that some of the businesses don't even have a restroom? But if I go in your area where you live at, there's all kind of restrooms everywhere. Quality of life is pretty good. So what is your agenda? You've been in office for almost 7 years. What is your agenda?
So we listened to you during this time.
Yeah, I mean, I got a question, too. I mean, what is your agenda for the black community? You've been in office for almost 7 years, and the quality of life is pretty bad down the south side.
Anything else?
I mean, I got more, but you're not going to give me more time because you're only giving me 3 minutes. That's not enough time. But I would like for you to answer that question. You've been in office for 7 years. And quality of life on the south side is pretty bad. You live out there on the north side with the Bush family and the Cowboys owner. And the issues they have on the south side, you don't have those issues. So how do you feel about this matter, sir? So you're just going to ignore me, huh?
You have anything else? We're listening.
I mean, I got more stuff. Like I said, you're not going to give me more time. So if I could get 20 minutes, I could speak more about some of the issues. But like I ask you, you live on the north side where everything's beautiful. The south side, it's the condition of living is pretty bad on the south side. Some of the businesses don't even have a restroom for the people that live there. So you're still not telling me what's your agenda for the black community. You've been there for 7 years. That's a long time.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're a horrible person, man.
Thank you.
Your next speaker, Richard Miles.
Interesting way to begin. Good morning, Mayor Mike Rollins and this esteemed city of Dallas Council. It is an honor and a privilege.
Let's put the mic next to your mouth. So there we go. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Mike Rollins and this esteemed city of Dallas Council. It is an honor and privilege to stand before you today. I want to express my gratitude to Councilman Felder for coming by our office last week and opening up this door of opportunity. My name is Richard Miles, and I'm one of the Dallas exonerees. Falsely imprisoned at the age of 19, sentenced to 60 years in the Texas Department of Corrections, spent 15 years for a crime that I had no knowledge of. I was released in 2009 on grounds of actual innocence and fully exonerated in 2012. In 2012, Miles of Freedom was established to provide holistic, supportive services for areas impacted by incarceration. We're located in the great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Center in South Dallas, where we are not only tenants, but we are partners. We're really excited and proud about the work that we have been able to accomplish in Dallas over the past 5 years. We provided services ranging from FAFSA filings and college enrollment to soft skill trainings and employment referrals for over 400 individuals with felony backgrounds. Through our family visitation shuttle service, we provided 500-plus families to stay connected to their loved ones while they are incarcerated. This year, we've made moves to expand our board of directors. We've worked with the United Way. We've worked with Social Venture Partners Dallas and Chase on a program and feasibility plan. All of this has been done with no paid staff and 3% recidivism rate. According to the TDCJ website, approximately 7,000 individuals return to Dallas a year after spending a minimum of 5 years disconnected from family, society, proper skill sets, and more. Historically, Texas has led in the building of prisons, incarceration rate, exonerations, and executions. But I feel Dallas has an opportunity to lead a progressive criminal justice reform movement. For these reasons and more, we are here to introduce Miles of Freedom to the city of Dallas with the hopes of building a working relationship that better addresses the systemic issues of individuals, families, and communities impacted by incarceration. This work can't be done alone. However, together, we can change lives, reduce recidivism, spur economic growth, grow safer neighborhoods, and become a model replicable of other cities and states. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Miles.
Thank you. This concludes your... Yes.
First of all, thank you for coming, Mr. Miles. I had an opportunity to go to the Martin Luther King Center a couple of weeks ago and met Mr. Miles. Didn't know of his story, didn't know anything about it. However, I was impressed with the fact that he was working with the Seedling Project at the MLK Center. He does this, I mean, this man was formerly incarcerated, wrongfully convicted and formerly incarcerated for how many years?
15 years.
15 years. I can't imagine how I would feel if my freedom was taken away from me for 15 years. And so I decided to go back the other day, and we sat and we talked. And he asked for help, and I'm going to give him help. Casey, when we talk about poverty, this is one of the drivers of poverty when people have their freedom taken from them. Mayor, when we talk about Grow South, these are some of the ills that affect our community. We must help people such as Mr. Miles, his organization, and the people that he represents. This is the root, one of the root causes of poverty, of crime, when people don't have hope. And I'm asking you, please help organizations like this. They need it. Mr. Miles, I will work with you. I'm going to help you. I see another friend that was formerly incarcerated, Mr. Wilbert. We go a long way back. My heart is with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Felder, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Miles, I also want to say, Mr. Felder, I had an opportunity to go over and visit as well as with Mr. Miles, and we hosted a community meeting on poverty in South Dallas at the Martin Luther King Center, and we had several service providers there, and what we wanted to do was we wanted to make sure the residents in the far part of South Dallas community know that there are service providers to meet those needs in the community. So, Mr. Miles, I commend you for taking the experience you went through and making lemonade out of a situation where you were given lemons. Whatever support that we can, we want to make sure that you're aware of different opportunities we have for potential funding, things of that nature, to be able to support those that that you serve in that community. So thank you for coming down and sharing with the whole council all the work that you're doing.
Well,
thank
you, Mr. Mayor. Appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. McGue.
Thank you. That concludes
Ms. McGue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to add thank you, Mr. Miles, for coming down. You got a good guy working there with you, Ezekiel Tyson, good friend. Love the work you're doing in the community. Appreciate you always stepping up. Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Callahan?
Yeah, Mr. Miles, I just want to make sure that you're working with Unlocking Doors Incorporated because they are the official vendor for Dallas County for I guess, ex-convicts, recidivists, and so forth. So those that are released from the TDCJ, they're doing a great work in Dallas County. So I just want to make sure that you're involved with them. Christina Melton Crane is the president of that organization. She's...
Well, no, just we've got to move on. He just wants to make sure you're talking to him.
I want to make sure you're aligned with
him.
Very important.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. This concludes your open microphone speakers. We'll now move to your voting agenda. Item 1, approval of minutes of the November 14, 2017 City Council meeting.
We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Agenda item 2. Consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. This morning we have full council, individual, and an officer appointment. Nominees for full council appointment to the Civil Service Board, Elizabeth A. Van Oort is being nominated by Councilmember Clayton. To the Housing Finance Corporation Board, Clinton V. Nolan is being nominated by Councilmember McGue. To the Reinvestment Zone 4 Board, Cedars Area, Mark Stevens is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Reinvestment Zone 5 Board, City Center, and Reinvestment Zone 11 Board, Downtown Connection, John Perry is being nominated by Councilmember Kingston. Mr. Perry meets the Property Owner in TIF District Special Qualification. To the Reinvestment Zone 7 Board, Sports Arena, M. Ava Elvave is being nominated by Councilmember Grayson and co-nominated by Councilmember Narvaez. To the Reinvestment Zone 16 Board, Davis Garden, Andrew Howard is being nominated by Councilmember Griggs. To the Reinvestment Zone 18 Board, Maple Mockingbird, Oscar Monsi-Baez is being nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Trinity River Corridor Local Government Corporation, Stacy Dore is being nominated by Mayor Rawlings. Nominees for individual appointments. To the Citizen Homelessness Commission, Letitia C. Owens is being nominated by Councilmember Thomas. Ms. Owens meets the general public special qualification. To the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board, David N. Kittner is being nominated by Councilmember Gates, and Brian H. Williams is being nominated by Mayor Rawlings. To the Civil Service Board adjunct members, William M. Coleman is being nominated by Councilmember Felder. To the Judicial Nominating Commission, Andrea M. Clark is being nominated by Councilmember Thomas. To the Landmark Commission, Leah C. Richter is being nominated by Councilmember Grayson. Ms. Richter meets the real estate developer with experience in commercial historical properties special qualification. Your officer appointment, Mark A. Melton, is being nominated chair of the Judicial Nominating Commission by Mayor Rawlings.
We're holding that. We're holding yours. We're holding.
I'm going to announce the ballot vote.
Yeah, we're not doing that yet. So we just have those up. Do we have a motion to approve? I didn't hear it. Motion, do we have a second?
Well, Mayor, are we separate the one they can defer?
Yes, that's what she didn't read those.
Okay.
So we're just voting on everybody that she's read. Motion, do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion's carried. Before we go to those things, I do want to tell you about Brian Williams, who I put on the Citizen Police Review Board. He is the doctor. I think he's Mr. Kingston's district, but he was the doctor at Parkland that worked with our officers when they were brought in that tragic night. And he's a very impressive guy. If you ever get a chance to meet Brian Williams, he's something else. So he's a good guy. Thanks, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. There were two separate ballot votes that were being presented for consideration. The ballot vote for position 2 to the Ethics Advisory Commission is being held till later in the meeting. And Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Atkins would like to be recognized regarding position 9, the ballot vote on position 9 to the Housing Finance Corporation Board.
Mr. Atkins.
Yes, we'll move that to council item agenda for December 13th.
Okay.
Defer to December 13th.
Do we have a second? Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Ms. Mayor, your briefings follow.
Okay. Thank you. And then we'll, when Mr. Griggs gets here, we'll take up position number 2. Good. We will talk about education, workforce, all the things I know Mr. Thomas has been focused on, and a lot of work has been done on this project, and I asked Mr. Broadnecks to look in this because I think it applies to each of our communities. So, Mr. Broadnecks, thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Mayor. I wanted to briefly introduce today's presenters, Chancellor May from the Dallas County Community College District and Todd Williams from Commit, who will present to the City Council an overview of Dallas County Promise, a scholarship program that ensures all students have an affordable path to college completion and are paired with a coach to support them through the college process. We're excited about the partnerships this has created and will create in the future to ensure the success of our future generations. Chancellor May.
Chancellor, is your light on?
There we go. How's that?
Better.
Now we got it.
Thank
Good
you.
Deal. And it is great to be here. And we want to share some information with you, what we believe is a transformative program that we're involved with our partners at Commit. And I'll share a little bit, then Todd Williams will also then share with you. But I really want to frame the context, if I could. I'm not sure how to advance the slide, but if we could go to the next one, that would be helpful. You know, as recently as 1970, in Dallas, in the city of Dallas and the North Texas area, 75% of the middle-class, middle-wage jobs were available with only a high school diploma or less than that. Today, we fast forward, and as we see the new jobs being created, we talk about 65% of the jobs requiring some type of post-secondary credential, but the new jobs, 99%, are requiring some type of post-secondary credential in order to meet the needs of the workforce. And this is why this has become such an important topic. Next slide, please. The as we look at that, we have adopted part of a statewide effort called 60 by 30. And let me just briefly explain this. This is an intentional effort to have 60% of the population have at least a certificate or a degree by the year 2030. For that, as we look at that, that's 550,000 students that year would need to complete a certificate or associate or bachelor's degree in Texas, and certainly we're a big part of that here in Dallas and North Texas. We're looking at these not to just be degrees for degree's sake, but for marketable skills that align with the economy, that align with the workforce, and that we also are mindful of debt. So as we talk about the program today, I hope you'll keep that in mind. And I'm gonna, the next slide will show where we set right now in Dallas County. We're on a trajectory right now by the year 2030 to have 191,000 individuals with a post-secondary credential of some type. That's about 40,000 degrees short of what we need simply to hit that 60% mark. If we can't hit that mark, then we're going to begin to see, I believe, a crumbling of many of the economic growth indicators that we've seen in our community over the past years, and we'll leave many people behind in our community. Next slide, please. I put this up as just a sample of where we see disconnects occurring, and they're virtually across the board in areas requiring often less than a bachelor's degree, but a certificate or an associate's degree particularly are challenges. And you can see the list of credentials that are being produced right now in the area and everything from registered nurses all the way to welders and medical sonographers and others that are there. We produced about 10,000 credentials, and yet there were advertised 52,000 in the area. That certainly explains some of the growth, but it also explains why we're seeing about 21,000 jobs unfilled right now that in our community that pay more than $24 an hour. Next slide, please. So we began to look at how we could attack this in a very different way. Now, as the Dallas County Community College District, many of you are aware, we have 7 colleges, operate about 12 campuses. We're in 26 locations of various types throughout throughout Dallas County. And this year we'll serve 165,000 students through our programs and services, about half of those in our credit program, about half of those in our adult education, English as a second language, and other workforce readiness programs. But we, as we looked at how to really change the metrics in Dallas County, and Todd's going to talk about this, we realized we had to take a different approach. And I'll share what we're doing, because we've been engaged in this for a very long time with the Dallas County Community College District, but quite honestly, we haven't seen the numbers move in a way that we wanted to see that happen. We've been very stagnant in terms of the number of people earning a post-secondary credential. In fact, we've had slight decline over the last 3 years compared to 5 and 10 years ago. So that's the wrong direction in the trend. So if we took the approach that if we continue to do things the same way, then we're not going to change those results. So we reached out to Commit, who supports an advisor to the mayor on education, but also involved in measuring what matters, looking at the best practices, and willingness to take on challenges, because we realize in many ways, as colleges and the community college district, while we were as important to us, we inadvertently were part of the problem of seeing things move forward and make that happen, because people didn't really understand how to access many of the programs and services. Next slide, please. So I wanted to share with this. So we then have expanded that partnership, again, thanks to Commit, and we appreciate the City of Dallas, others that are involved. In fact, it's almost a daily. I was getting calls last night and emails from others that really want to help us address them, be a part of this effort to provide an opportunity to the entire county and make sure that all 107 high schools in Dallas County, 28,000 students, will have an opportunity to attend college at no cost to them, enabling us to meet the needs. Next slide. So what exactly is the Dallas County Promise? And one of the things in the introduction, it was said as a scholarship. It's actually not a scholarship program. What we're really doing is working with our schools and our partners to transform the public schools. At the same time, we're preparing people to get ready for college. And let me explain how that works. Right now, it involves our efforts with early college high schools, career academies, and P-TECH high schools throughout Dallas County. These are all transformative efforts that are basically working with students to not only impact them, and right now we're working with about 8,000 students in this effort, and working with the hardest to serve high schools in the area. In fact, the high schools we're working with only have 11% of the graduates going on to post-secondary education. We'll talk about that later. But what we're doing is working with them in cohorts of 125 each at each high school, not just to transform the cohorts, but to transform the entire school. And that's working remarkably well. But that's a key component because in order to be eligible, the school district must be involved in some sort of transformative effort to get them up to the 60% level that we're looking, or increase the high school graduation rate and the college readiness rate. Secondly, we're using a program that many of you are familiar with called Rising Star. The Dallas County Community College District started this scholarship program about 20 years ago, and we're blessed to have about $32 million now, thanks to the generosity of the individuals in Dallas County, to be able to guarantee that every student can attend the first 2 years of college free. And Todd will talk a little bit about this later on, because it really is leveraging federal dollars that are available to the majority of our community and encouraging them to complete the paperwork in order to receive a Pell Grant, which, because at Dallas County Community College District, we've artificially in many ways kept tuition low thanks to the generosity of the taxpayers of Dallas County, so that a student can attend classes with us for 1 year, total cost, this is it, $1,770 as a full-time student. You can earn a degree for $3,540 total cost with us, as we have the third lowest tuition in the nation in order to make that available. This allows the Pell Grant to cover the cost of our students, but for DACA students, for others that don't have those dollars, our foundation will guarantee that 100% meet the criteria, which we'll explain that. It's not grades and it's not financial, but we do have expectations of the schools. One, that they're part of a school that's in transformation, and we'll go over the rest of it. And finally, the third part is what we call, it's a Level Up, which is a new scholarship we're creating. We're in the process of raising $20 million right now, because they're, in order to get to the 60%, we can't just work with the high school students. We have to have adults coming back to school that may have missed out on their education. So this is for adults that have a gap in their education. We're identifying career tracks that lead to well-paying jobs in the county, and we will guarantee that those individuals can also attend at no cost. We'll admit the first students under this program in the fall of 2018. And with that, I'm going to next slide, please, and I'll turn it over to Todd Williams. But I just in doing this. So this is what is part of the Dallas County Promise. This is the webpage that's up and running right now, which allows students to commit to a college education and begin that process of committing in a way that we can guarantee them that they will have an opportunity for a post-secondary degree at no cost. With that, Todd, I'll turn it over to you in the next slide.
Sure, next slide. So think about this package. Is the gestation of all this is that Joe and I and others went to the state of Tennessee, which launched the Tennessee Promise in 2014.
Todd, is your mic on?
Sorry.
How's that?
That's much better.
So Joe May and I and others went to the state of Tennessee, which launched the Tennessee Promise led by the governor of Tennessee in 2014. We effectively assured every student in the entire state would go to community college for free. The average community college tuition in Tennessee is about $4,200. The average U.S. Pell Grant is about $3,500. So $700 was the gap scholarship that would be funded through the Tennessee Lottery. The second most critical component that he created at that same time was something called Tennessee Achieves, which was a standalone nonprofit of 20 people whose sole job was to be a backbone entity to that scholarship and make sure that every single student, every single high school in the entire state was communicated with, every student signed a pledge, their data went into a Salesforce application, and they could be tracked all during that process. In 2014, 70% of the national growth in financial aid completions occurred in one state because of that action, in Tennessee. So we effectively said, how can we take what's been happening there and bring it back to Dallas and improve it? Because their effort was really about access. We wanted our effort not to be only about access, but also completion. And we were equally compelled by the fact that while their tuition was $4,200 per year, our tuition was less than $1,800 a year. In other words, for a very, very long time within the city of Dallas and Dallas County, almost every student in this region, given the fact that 3 in 4 kids are economically disadvantaged, could go to college for free. But the numbers were not adding up and showing that reflection. The biggest challenge that we have within the state of Texas and within high schools in general, which are undercapitalized, underfunded, and overworked at times, is that high schools are incentivized to graduate kids. That's what they're tracked on. That's what they're held accountable for. But the percentage of their kids that actually access college, complete college, how much remediation is needed is really not well known or well tracked by principals. And so when Joe says that we want to help transform high schools, the promise is that tool to do it, because we're simply asking, if we provide free college to every single student within your high school, will you start to do things that will actually assess readiness in the high school? And then let's put the remediation in the high school and not necessarily put it on the student's budget when they get to college, which they have to use student debt for or their Pell Grant to pay for on their nickel and they get no credit for. So the promise obviously is three big things: tuition-free college for 60 hours over a three-year period, mentoring and success coaching, which is being hired by DZZZD so that every student is tracked and that outcome is tracked and supported and intervened if there's absences, if there's grade issues, et cetera, that there's an automatic way to reach out to those students and try and own the outcome for their completion. And then equally important is, how do we push knowledge into the colleges and how do we push knowledge into the high schools about all the different careers that are out there, where are the biggest job needs, where are the biggest mismatches, what are the credentials that are needed to get that degree? Because not every student wants to do a four-year BA or even a two-year associate's degree. If they can get a technical certificate in 6 months and be working with a living wage job, that we should make sure that they understand that that is an option for them. Next slide. So what are the three things that we're asking every student to do? And we're starting off with 31 pilot high schools, all of which are early college programs, with the goal that ultimately this program gets scaled to the entire county and 107 high schools. Sign a pledge by January 31st. In the first pilot program of 9,200 students, roughly, over 6,000 students have signed this pledge in the first 7 weeks. It has been incredibly pushed out and high energy in the campuses, because they realize that I don't have to figure out who's got the right GPA or who is a citizen and who's not, et cetera. Effectively, every student all means all. The second thing they have to do is they have to fill out their financial aid application by March 15th. And then they also have to submit an Apply Texas form to apply to college. And then the third is that they have to complete their DZZZD registration by July 31st. So three simple things that we're asking each student to do, and we're basically producing weekly reports that goes to every principal, every influencer in the community, and we're adding to that list daily to make sure they understand what is the take-up, what are the sign-ups in every single one of these high schools, and then we'll keep tracking that in terms of how many have filled out their financial aid forms. But because they're signing a pledge and they're giving us their data, we can case manage every kid starting today. Next slide. The other key thing we did is that this has to be done in partnership. So Joe May and others on the team went to UNT Dallas and President Bob Mung and said, what would you do for students who go through this initial cohort of the Promise? And Bob Mung and his generosity basically said, every student who graduates from the Promise in 2 years with a 2.0 GPA, we will give them years 3 and years 4 of tuition free as well. So now there is a 4-year pathway to a BA degree in the city of Dallas where you don't have to leave home. And then we went to SNU and said, surely you give scholarships to kids who transfer from DZZZD. And they've also agreed to provide a number of scholarships. And we're now approaching other 4-year universities and said, what can you add to this portfolio so that every kid finds the right pathway for them that makes sense given their aspirations and their career desires? Next slide. Again, what we're trying to attack is this problem. This is the percentage of kids within 6 years following high school graduation across Dallas County that are getting a 2- or 4-year degree. That number has been declining every year. And last year, the high school class of 2010, over 18,000 students did not get a living wage credential, 2- or 4-year degree within 6 years following high school graduation. You remember Joe's number of 65%? We're at 27% in terms of our own pipeline. We're importing a lot of people around the country given our job growth, but we cannot nor should we ever think that we can export the kids that we fail. And so this is a very concerted effort by a lot of collaboration that we have got to do what we can to make sure that every child is educated within our region. Next slide. And again, it's also a situation of equity. We have twice the year college completion rates for our Anglo students versus our Hispanic and our Black students. Next slide. So here are the 31 schools. Again, all they were chosen because they all have an early college program within them today. And you can see that the 6-year college completion rate for a 3-year period for these 31 schools was 11% versus 36% for the county and 60% for our neighbors to the north in Collin County. Next slide. Oh, let me go back one if you don't mind. The other key thing is these students, in that, on average, 82% economically disadvantaged, 90% students of color as well. Next slide. This is just a chart that basically the first column on the left shows what percentage of those students qualify for free and reduced lunch or are considered economically disadvantaged. The next column shows in 2016 how many of them actually filled out their financial aid form. Basically, if they're economically disadvantaged, they definitely qualify for financial aid, and you can see the disparity there in terms of how few are applying and filling out their financial aid form versus being qualified to do so. And then the last column is what percent actually enrolled in a Texas institution in September following high school graduation. So big numbers in terms of disparities and also low numbers in terms of take-up versus what our career and our workforce needs and what they need in terms of having a living wage credential.
But might point out on that, too, if you look at the college enrollment rate, it does not correlate to the economic disadvantage. It's if you go across line for line, it correlates to how many complete the FAFSA. And so completing that FAFSA is a key indicator on whether or not they'll go to college. So you can have an area with high disadvantage and yet high FAFSA completion, and you see a higher than normal college attendance rate. Okay. Next slide, please. We want to share with you as we look at throughout the district. This is 70% of the students we're working with are in DISD. And again, we started with some of the most challenging schools, some of them with as little as 4% of the graduates going on to earn a post-secondary credential within 6 years of high school. So we started working with a school, and you can see that it's you can pick any line up here and go across where we have the number of students enrolled in dual credit. If you look at Carter, that's 72. 79% of those completed with an A, B, C, or D went on that with the completed credits over 184, and the success rate is 73%. So what we're really looking at is that success rate. And I want you to notice, like Pinkston at 100%, and Siegelville, which are both challenging schools to work with, what we're able to do by focusing, and let me kind of explain the program and what we do. In order to be a part of it, the school must commit to a boot camp for eighth graders enrolling in the ninth grade. Secondly, they must commit to work with us with improving reading skills in the ninth grade, writing skills in the 10th grade, and mathematics in the 11th grade when we start the dual enrollment. What we're able to do with this approach is so far we've had 100% of the students graduate college ready, meaning that they're not only have a college credit, they're ready to continue their academic career. Next slide, please. As we look at the retention rate, what we see is that the if you look at this, the blue represents our collegiate academies. The orange represents non-collegiate academy students in terms of 10th, 9th, and 10th, or retention from 9th to 10th grade. And I point that out because that's a big place where we lose a lot of students in terms of that transition. The handoff often goes very poorly for many of them, and they do not tend to graduate. What we've been able to do is really change those numbers as it impacts. And I want to point out, we do the opposite of creaming. in terms of how we select students. While we normally have two applicants for every slot that we have and within a school, we choose the highest risk students and look at the in terms of demographics and others. So what you're seeing here is that a real change in behavior on the part of the individuals by staying in school and increasing the success of those students at the same time. Next slide, please. So here's where we set as we look at our goal. We have a goal to have 70% of seniors completing the FAFSA in 2017. We want 65% enrolled in colleges as well, and we're looking at having 60% earn above a 2.5 GPA average, with our goal of 40% earning a four-year degree while they are still in high school. So this is the goal. Right now we're at about 30% though of our early college high school career academy students graduating with an associate's degree at the same time they're earning their high school diploma. You can quickly do the math in your head of how much that saves the family, how much that saves the student, but more importantly, we're turning individuals who would not have completed high school into college graduates at the time that they leave high school. Next slide, please. So as we look at this, and Todd pointed out this issue, what is this worth financially and just to our community and dollars that are being left on the table? If you look at the high school graduates in 2016 in terms of where we're sitting, we're just barely over, hopefully we'll hit 52% of the high school seniors that are able to earn the dollars. But by increasing that of 9%, that's over $2 million coming in to our community, coming in to help pay for the education students. So it's not just trivial. It has a real impact. Next slide, please. This is one of the things that we're dramatically, I guess, concerned about when we look at what's happening in Dallas, today, compared to the U.S. and Texas and other cities, that we are seeing a declining medium household income. Part of that is simply because many of the residents do not have the skills to compete for jobs in today's economy, as we see that growth. Next slide, please. So as we work together within the community, there's a couple of asks that we need help on going forward. One, we want this to stay in front of the community, making sure that every person knows that there's an opportunity, and as we grow this out, we'll continue. Fortunately, we have the resources right now to handle that. As we see the growth of the program, we don't want to leave anyone behind. We may be looking for additional resources, but that's not the case right now. We want to make sure that the community is aware of the opportunity, that every single person has the chance to earn a post-secondary degree, and perhaps importantly, we need business and industry engagement. A big part of our early college high school efforts is that we now require two business partners for every high school before that we'll do that. Fortunately, we're at 52 right now for our 31, so we're able to manage that, but we're going to continue. And then also we'll be recruiting from the city of Dallas, from city employees, from business and industry mentors to work with these students once they complete the FAFSA and are ready to enroll in school. And with that, thank you very much for letting us spend some time with you today and share this.
Thank you, Chancellor. Thank you, Todd. There are a lot of questions. I'm just asking one. Why don't the kids fill out FAFSA? What's the hurdle for them?
You know, I think there's a couple of reasons that it goes on. One is a complex document. You have to engage the families in that. You have to provide tax information and others.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, in previous roles here, we discovered some families haven't completed their taxes. So that's a challenge. But two, I think there's a lot of effort giving to folks going to four-year institutions that are getting the help. They frankly honestly don't need the same help. Their family's help, there's other things going on there to help make that possible. And frankly, our efforts have not always worked. We spend, I'll tell you, almost $1 million a year for staff, full-time staff in Dallas County Community College District, that their sole job is to help students complete the FAFSA. It's not changed the numbers. And here's the reason why, is when we go into a school and offer to help, if they're from El Centro, 95% of the students say, well, I'm not going there. And therefore, and that happens with every college, every university that comes in to assist with that. So we get stuck at about 40-something percent completing it when we know our needs are far greater than that.
Mike, let me just add two quick things. One, Mayor, is that the average high school counselor to student ratio in most public high schools in this region is probably one counselor to every 300 to 400 kids. So if you get 1/300th of a counselor's time in your low-income first generation, it's not a lot of support. And, again, it gets back to what the incentives are within high school and what they're held accountable for. It's about graduation, which is so most of the time is spent on just making sure you got all your credits and you're graduating and not getting the support. And, again, that's just a resource issue that we need to have more money in our public schools in general. And, secondly, how do you establish the mindset from the very beginning in ninth grade, even before in middle school, that there is a path to get a – you should go to college in 13th and 14th grade and potentially beyond. And so there's just a mindset and expectation that is pushed to the parents, pushed to the students, and some schools do that better than others.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, oftentimes we discuss a number of things and the media is just lined up at the back, and this one day when the press should be here and covering this. This is a potential game changer for Dallas, for this effort that we're working on. My partner here, Councilmember Clayton, and the Mayor's Task Force on Poverty, this is truly a game changer. I had a chance to meet colleagues with Dr. May and Todd Williams in my office just a few months ago, and we were meeting to discuss a plan to encourage more high school students to go past high school. What's happening is we have a lot of people, especially in the African-American community, Councilmember Carraway, who are graduating from high school, but they're not going past colleges. That first slide was up. You know, that's alarming. You have this many jobs, that large percentage, 100% of jobs, that's going to require post-secondary education and students aren't doing that. So, we were meeting to discuss a strategy to address this. That's when they first told me about this, Dallas County Promise, and so I was pretty excited about it. The thing that's unique about this is it's a front-end approach to closing this workforce development gap. A lot of the work that's being done by Workforce Solutions, our city staff with the workforce initiative that we rolled out just last year, as well as many other partners, chambers, is looking at on the back end. We have people who graduated from high school and may have been incarcerated who were trying to get back into society. We got individuals, single parent mothers, for example, who've been out of school for a number of years, and we're trying to get them skilled up in order to be able to fill some of these middle skill gaps jobs that are out there. But this is a front end approach and a proactive approach. If you turn to slide four, page four, please. You know, another slide, if we were to just kind of choose a few slides out of here that we should really, really give a lot of attention to is this one. You know, one of the things, and colleagues who you remember, we were briefed on the J.P. Morgan report about a year and a half ago. And when I first saw the report, this was most alarming to me, how many middle skill jobs that are out here in the few people who have the skill level to fill this gap. As we look at, for instance, registered nurse, and we have a number, United Way has pulled together a healthcare consortium that's working together with organizations to fill this registry. 4,980 credentials produced, but over 36,000 job postings. You know, that should be alarming to us. And that's just one example. But if you go throughout, machinists, zero, but 358 job postings. So this is critical. We talk about moving people into the middle class. We talk about alleviating poverty.
this is how we do it. We have to provide a way for people to be able to get the skills in order to, if you go to a two-year college and get your certification, most of these jobs require a certification. They don't require a four-year degree, so we can encourage more young people to go. Page 7, please. When we look at this particular slide and we look at with these initiatives, and I was going to ask what Level Up was, but I was glad you told me, and whatever I could do, as you know, to help in any way with that particular initiative and the other ones, I'm available and willing to do. Even with this initiative and the plan for 2025, 2030, it's still going to be a number of jobs. We're starting behind. We're trying to make up and fill a gap that we're far behind of. And so this is going to help tremendously, but it's not going to get us where we need to go. So we've got to make sure we put the attention where it needs to be. Let's look at page 11. I think this was critical, because we have a number of people who are going to take advantage of this opportunity that's going to go to the community college, but having this commitment from UNT Dallas and SMU to extend this opportunity to tuition free to be able to get a bachelor's degree, you're talking about breaking generational curses, breaking generational gaps of poverty by creating this this opportunity. I have a question. Have you spoken with Dr. Sorrell or Paul Quinn about being a part of this as well? And what was his response?
Yeah, we're working together. In fact, I have another meeting coming up with him next week.
Okay.
To,
if I need to make a call, let me know.
He's a willing and great partner
to
work with.
We're also starting to talk about universities that are outside the region, such as Prairie View A&M and others who may be interested, who normally take a lot of our transfers. It's just really using data to figure out where our kids going from community college and then going to those things. You already take them anyway. You already provide financial anyway. Let's go ahead and what commitment can you make so that when we talk to all the students, there's a whole portfolio of options for them in front of them.
And we are starting to have universities, as they read the articles that have been out on this, they are reaching out to us saying we want to participate and make this. So those conversations are going on. You know, we launched this as a pilot, to be quite honest, and we're just seeing if we were on the right track. The response has far exceeded our expectations on every single front, including this one.
Excellent. Page 12. Page 12, please. Thank you. 12.
Is that 12?
That's 20. 20.
Thank you. What are the factors that are preventing students from graduating? We see this gap, and we see how many are graduating, but in 6 years, 4 years, 6 years, they're not graduating. What are some of the factors, even at the community college level, Dr. May, that you're hearing? What are some factors that prevents students from graduating?
You know, I think there's still this attitude that college is not for everyone, that there's really not an understanding of what's going on in our economy in the job market today. I mean, we went back and just recently looked at the 122,000 new jobs created in North Texas between September 2015 and September 2016. Almost 70% require some type of post-secondary credential that's there. I don't think that's well understood. Secondly, I think Todd hit it, that while there are some high schools that are focused on ensuring that students understand and are preparing to earn some type of post-secondary credential, many are just simply trying to get them to graduate from high school. And it's selling that short with that's causing a lot of students to think, well, that's all I need to do, and without a real understanding of what's happening in our economy.
Let me add a couple of things. One is transportation, and Chancellor May has done a very admirable thing by effectively buying DART passes for every kid within the system to address that issue. Secondarily is a lot of times family pressure to go to work to provide to the family, and so trying to push, again, college into high school so there's less time away post-high school that they can get to a career much faster is a key critical component. And again, I think just also the supports within the high school and to the student. I went to college on 99% financial aid, and what really helped me more than anything, and many people in this room, I'm sure, is that you have to have mentors. You have to have people talk to you, encourage you to not give up, to have grit, all those kind of things, and that's a critical thing that we need to bring to the table as well.
Excellent. Two questions, and then I'm done. I know that the pledge takes place at your senior year. How are you planning to inform students and parents at the middle school age about this opportunity, so once they get there, they'll be prepared? And this, I heard you talk about an eighth grade boot camp academy. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
The idea is part of what we're really trying to do is eliminate handoffs and decision making. Were we anywhere there's a handoff in the system, we lose people. And so the idea is to get them to commit and ready for high school coming out of the eighth grade, but in effect, they've already made a decision to go to college. There is no other decision to be made about attending college once that happens. So the idea is to really begin to prep them, get them ready coming out of the eighth grade. As I said, then we focus on reading in the ninth grade, writing in the 10th grade, math, so that we scaffold them in a way that really hasn't been done previously in the school, so that they begin those conversations. Now, I have to say, the other thing that's happened is that the schools are now taking a much greater initiative. We have school districts that the superintendent has bought T-shirts for every student in the high schools to get that, say, Dallas County Promise. Supporting that, it's caused one-on-one intervention to occur, and we already have seen an increase in the number of Pell Grants from 1 year ago in these schools, which is means that's more people going to college that's there. So but we will back that all the way up to start the communication in the fifth grade as we continue to grow this going forward.
Let me add one other thing that Joe mentioned. We have two times as many students applying to go to early college in DISC schools as we have slots. That's a funding issue. So DISC today is spending $35 million to have early colleges for 100 and 125 kids per cohort, but we could do twice that number. That's twice that funding.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My time is up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clayton.
I think we'll just keep going down the aisle. So, one, thank you for coming. I remember 2 years ago when I met you for the first time, Todd, the mayor said, you need to meet this guy. He's a doer. And, Dr. May, everything I've ever heard about you always has a compliment behind it. I was really looking forward to this briefing because we get a lot of people who will tell us what the problem is and not many people who can tell us a solution and certainly not do it at scale, so thank you. So the mayor had asked a question that I wanted to ask about the financial aid. So you had mentioned the fact, and I had heard this, that one of the challenges about getting people in the pipeline is the fact that maybe mom, dad, or mom or dad had not done a tax return. Does that just exclude them, or how are you addressing some of those fundamental challenges of maybe lack of literacy on the parental side, and now we're trying to get kids to community college?
Well, one of the other individuals we took with us to Tennessee was Jennifer Sampson with the United Way, because we really want to include other entities in terms of that. And one of them we talked specifically about are helping people with taxes to get that done. Now, we do a lot of that within our district as well, but quite honestly, it's too late once they've left high school. It's they're behind already. So we're looking at, frankly, any organization, including those that the city are involved with that are working with high school youth at all, to also encourage and support and engage, because the families don't trust everyone in this process, and hearing from others about the importance of the FAFSA and the need for taxes. And a lot of folks, understand that they worry, but what they're often leaving on the table is we found, and through another institution before I came to Dallas, we implemented this. The first year alone, we brought in $7.9 million to the families of just tax revenue that most of them are getting a refund. They're not paying into the system, which then makes their students eligible for $3,500 to $3,700 in Pell Grants. So the net impact on both the individual family is actually a very positive one, in helping communicate that by trusted sources so that they understand understand what this means. Secondly, I do think that we need the families in many cases aren't encouraging their own children to go. We are aware that while they're okay with them in certain parts of the city going to college, the particularly women are often told you can go, but you have to live at home, and so that also I think with that family dynamic sometimes means that they're not completing the FAFSA because the families don't want the children to go away. So this creates an option, we believe, to cut that argument off by saying no, I can go here at home and have that taken care of.
Got it. So, in the interest of time, I'll just ask one more question. Where I kind of got lost in the briefing, I read through it a couple times, and I just didn't follow. Todd, you had mentioned about there's twice as many folks going in to the collegiate academies as there are slots. But on this program, so use Pinkston or, you know, name your school. Do you have to be in a collegiate academy to take advantage of this? Or take me through name your school.
Yeah, no, what we're seeing is the high schools where we have collegiate academies, we're seeing a fundamental change in the entire high school. High schools we've been with a long time, a number of years, like Samuel. I mean, it's gone from when we started in 2009 with them, 9% of the graduates going on to earn a post-secondary credential, to our most recent year, 58%. We're not quite to the 60%, but that's the whole school. That's not just the early college high school. So what we're seeing is that when we go into the school, right now, we're remodeling the facilities, that are there. We're branding it with college names and logos in the partnership, and that is having a transformative effect throughout the entire school. Plus, we make dual enrollment classes. Again, we scholarship 100% of those while they're in high school. We do that out of our operating budget. That's about $17 million a year right now that we spend on that, and not just for the early college high school students, but also for any student that wants to take dual credit courses. And that's growing across the district.
So like where Todd went, you went to BA, so they're a leadership academy. Right. So if you are a freshman in high school now, you can still take advantage of this program. You just have to forgive me, just take me through that one scenario. Let's say you're a ninth grader coming into BA.
Let's say you're a ninth grader and you're in the early college program versus you're not. Effectively, if you're in the early college program, you can get your associate's degree by the time you graduate from high school. But if you're not in the early college program, you can take advantage of the promise. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then I think, if I remember right, at least with respect to this cohort, UNTD has said that if you get your two-year degree while in high school, we will still give you years 3 and 4 direct.
Okay, that's where I didn't follow.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I would love to meet with you guys offline. I think there's some things that we're doing, you know, from a tax preparation standpoint on some grants that we're already doing. We're working with the DISD on a more senior level through staff. I think there's some things that we may be able to help you on that. You might not have known we could, so I'd love to visit with you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Felder. Mr. Thomas, thank you.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Listen, first of all, I love the program that you have put together, and I think that, you know, it has everything that will help to get the skills and the credentials that are needed in Dallas-Fort Worth. So what I want to ask is a couple of things. First, slide 4, please. Okay, so we're talking about college readiness and graduation from college, but this skill set on this page is talking about basically trades. And so talk to me about what you're doing in terms of trades. How are you addressing that issue?
Yeah, and a couple of things there. That certainly, that alignment is very important for us. At Dallas County Community College District, we operate, for example, 26 healthcare programs, and every one of them lead to great jobs in the economy. But I do think that there are some areas where we're short in. I'll use one that is actually kind of up there under the welder and that area, and that's as we get into pipe fitter welders and this sort of thing. Right now, there are jobs all over the area for those folks, starting out at about 41 to 51,000. Within 3 years, they're going to be making 71,000 a year. But there's never been a mother, there's never been a counselor, there's never been a teacher in the history of time that told their son or daughter, I want you to grow up and to be a pipe fitter and that. And so so here's what we have going on. While 65% of the jobs already require some type of post-secondary credential, of those, about 32% require a bachelor's degree or higher. We're at 29%. So there's a gap there that we have to grow into. But we're only at 4.4 to 6.4% of those with the middle skill jobs. So the real disconnect is coming out of high school that we're getting people prepared for a four-year degree. We're not getting them on a track to understand that they've got to continue their education in order to be eligible for these jobs. So it's a real breakdown in the model, because a lot of these, you know, I've gone into to schools and talked to teachers and counselors and advisors and others and asked them that very question: how many of you even know what a pipe fitter is? How many of you know what the jobs are that are out there? And I may have one hand go up in a room. So there is a disconnect in terms of the salary. Folks don't understand that today, I mean, collision technicians are making up to $150,000 a year. That these are great paying jobs, great careers, that most of these start above $24 an hour on this list that are there, but that's not well understood or known.
So I guess let me go deeper into it. Are you willing to add this to the program that you have?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, you don't currently have it, but you're willing to add it.
Well, we do offer all these. In fact, we are also partnering this year with DISD. We're going to add an auto collision high school, an automotive high school, and a construction. We're already partnering with Wilmer Hutchins and our construction technology program at Northlake, where we operate that as well. We do have robust programs in there. We just need more students to enroll and take advantage of it.
But to be clear, the 60-hour commitment includes up to 60 hours for technical certificates.
That's exactly right. We'll cover all these in there as well. Whether you want to be a dental hygienist, if you want to be a registered nurse, that's all part of the program.
Because I represent District 7, and I'll tell you that the college graduation rate in District 7 is like below 30%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's a great opportunity, you know, because a lot of students may not want to go to college, and you're going to find that. They may want to go into these fields, and so I just want to make sure that you're offering that.
Yeah, and I think that's a key point today. Even areas like construction, you're going to have reading ability, writing ability, mathematics, because you are not going to get on the site without an OSHA 10 safety card at minimum, and probably additional safety cards that are going to require evidence that that's going to be important for just about any employer. So all these are going to require some type of education or training beyond high school.
Okay, slide 7, please. So on slide 7, the level up piece, that's what I want to discuss. When you talk about adult population, I want to go back to one of the speakers, Mr. Miles. I want to talk about the formerly incarcerated.
Sure.
How can we integrate the formerly incarcerated and get them an opportunity? Because they're the ones that really need this opportunity.
Yeah.
And homeless.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. I don't know if anyone else has been under the bridge. I've been under the bridge several times. There are ex-teachers under that bridge, homeless. Okay? Everybody under the bridge is not crazy. Some of these people have got on drugs, whatever the case may be. At the end of the day, if we give them this opportunity, they're back in society. And so how can we integrate these two into this program?
Well, one, let me comment on the last part first. We know, we just finished up a major student study. We know right now, for example, that 13% of our students are homeless. that are enrolled out of the 165,000. That's a large number. Now, they're not under the bridge. What they're doing is what we call sofa surfing. They don't really have a place to live. They're just going from friends to sometimes backyards or whatever whatever's available. We know that 39% of our students are food insecure, with 17% are missing meals daily. We know that about 40% also have transportation issues up to, but at any one time, but 70% of our students are going to have transportation issues during their year. That's why we decided that we would partnered with DART. We bought DART passes for up to 123,000 students a year that are eligible for those. We partnered with the North Texas Food Bank now to open pantries at every college, and we're partnering on a mobile pantry that can help out there. So we're going to continue to work on those. We also we see Level Up as one that working with those that are incarcerated. I've got meetings coming up, in fact, with those that are working with inmates exiting the system, and so that we can make that. That's as certainly we as well as immigrants. We've not limited that. What we are, however, doing, we don't want individuals coming in and getting going to college not being able to get a job. So we are going to limit the fields that they can go into to careers that are paying $24 an hour or above.
Okay. And so, Mr. Finch, please come up. So I've been working with Salesforce and having conversations with Mr. Finch with regard to coding. And so, Mr. Finch, would you please briefly go over the Salesforce piece, how someone can get into that program, the level of ease to learn this software?
Well, there are a number. I mean, that's just one of many different technology products. I know as far as the ease of getting into that, there's certainly a lot of job opportunities with it from that standpoint. And it's there's certainly a software vendor that we do business with that we are also engaging as a partner for helping us with Madison High School. We're part of DISD, Dallas County Community College District, PTEC Early Collegiate Program, and so Madison High School is one of those that we participate in and help these. We've dealt with the freshman and the sophomore years, and so we're approaching the junior and senior, which is where they will begin their internships, certifications, and those things that we hope to be able to expose them to and help them get.
So basically, Mr. May, since you're the chancellor of the community college district, we're going to need some laptops and some classrooms, because we're beginning to get to the point where we're going to roll out this program. And so can I put you on the spot and ask for a commitment?
Well, we appreciate the partnership, and also with Dallas Fire and Rescue, others that are here as part of city. We're partnering right now on that, and what we're doing is we're investing in every one of these program areas.
Okay, so can I get a commitment for classrooms and laptops?
Well, look at what we're talking about, but I can tell you we're gonna not let a barrier get in the way of students getting an education.
Is that a commitment?
That's a commitment.
Thank you. That's all I need. Thank you, Mr. Finch. So, Mayor, this is what I'm talking about. The underserved communities, the at-risk communities, there's going to be actually, there's a proposition on the table for a homeless student population in my district. And so they need help. They need this particular program. And so, again, I'm asking you again, Mayor, please help this homeless population, help this formerly incarcerated population, because that is what weighs on society. People tend to look the other way and not include them in this process. And so I'm going to do what I can as a council person, but you have a bigger bully pulpit than I do. And so I'm asking for you to help. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Felder and Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank to both of you, Chancellor and Mr. Williams. You have 31 schools, and I saw the list of the 31 schools.
do you have, for example, there is discussion of two of the schools that I see on the list of DISD closing, potentially closing, Madison and Lincoln. I hope it does not happen. I graduated from Roosevelt, so I'm a public school guy. But if that or something like that were to happen, what is the process of selecting the next school? You can announce all mine. I'm gonna start setting a 5-minute rule, and so I'm gonna be through in 5. So let me just ask them, and then you can quantify and answer as I go. And also, I've been doing college tours, and where I would take as many as 8 buses of children, mm-hmm. of students to visit different colleges. Mm-hmm. And what opened up their eyes, surprisingly, was when we went to Waco, as my colleague mentioned, and we went to the technology school in Waco. Their eyes lit up. So it is important, I think, that we have an association with the technology school out of Waco, and they now have opened up a campus in Red Oak. So I guess you all are aware of that, mm-hmm. but I think that they should be given the same opportunity to see what they may have to offer that will go along with all of the mechanics and the aircrafts and the engineering and all of those different types of technology. That was something that was just off the chain that we found to be something worthy of talking about. I'd also want to make mention and say and suggest, and this would be to the mayor and you all, that you all involve our Dallas Youth Commission. Our Dallas Youth Commission, they are very studious, and they are students, and I would like for them, Mayor, to receive this same level of briefing so that they are the junior city council, okay. and they need to hear it so that they can be our tentacles going out into the community. As well, I would like to also know what are we doing with, and I support public schools, but now looking to 2030, the growth of these charter schools are growing. What do we do about the charter schools at all, if any, with those students that are graduating and are going off to college as well as our public schools, and such as KIPP and Faith Family and Life and the other institutions where these kids are going off to college, want to go to college, qualify to go to college, to complete their education and to then come back and be citizens of our city. I would like to have some kind of consideration with that. So those are the things I kind of wanted to just kind of mention and put on you all's plate, and so you can kind of figure out what, if anything, that we can do and consider to include those folks that are still going to schools, because realistically, it's growing, and it's increasingly growing, and they will also be the young folks that will come back and be running our city and our country as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carraway. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of questions. Good presentation. Thank you for sharing it with us. On page 14, the schools that are mentioned, if you're a student and not in one of these schools, can you still participate in this program?
You're still eligible for our Rising Star Scholarship that we have in place, which has been there for years. So that one has slightly different criteria. But our goal is to get all 107, both public and charter schools and others within the county involved in the future. And we just had a meeting with superintendents from around the area, both of schools involved, but mostly those that weren't, and really rolling out out to them what we're looking for them, because it's a two-way commitment. It's not, it's really not a scholarship program. It really is a commitment to transforming both the school and partnering while they're in high school.
Okay.
And now they don't necessarily have to work with us. We're happy if they want to do a partnership with UNT Dallas, if they want to
right.
work
but
with
but if you're outside others. Of the Dallas County Promise program, you're really not eligible for it directly at this point.
Not for this right now. Okay. That's right.
And that's in the Dallas County Promise. I mean, I've just had constituents ask. That's, I think it's been perceived as, you know, free schooling for everybody in Dallas County. And I guess that's essentially the goal eventually, but right now it's not that.
That's right. We started with the 31 high schools that have already committed,
okay.
and there are a lot of ways that they can participate, and we'll be adding in schools that are already above that 60% number, but our goal is to get to that 60% graduate rate.
And I think some of the other confusion is it's free, but it's not, I mean, it is free, but it's not with your, I mean, this is what I'm hearing is people, well, what's going to happen with my Dallas County schools? Tax, is it going to go up to be able to fund this? I think it'd be nice for you to clarify that so people that are listening can understand.
Yeah, I mean, we're blessed that about 60% of our budget does come from the taxpayers of Dallas County. That means we're not as dependent upon tuition as some other institutions would be. So by keeping that tuition low, it really does enable the federal Pell Grant to...
you're getting other grants to fund it.
That's
it's
exactly
not like
right.
you're going back to the taxpayers to pay
right.
for it. Okay, thanks. And that was my understanding, but I just think it's nice to have that on record because that was some of the questions I've heard when they just hear that, because everybody knows that nothing's for free.
That's true.
On page 12, those numbers, a 27% that Dallas College completion, is that college completion or is that also certification?
That's certificates, degrees, both. So
that's everything. So if you went to a technical school, that would be there?
Yes.
Or you'd be,
yes.
You'd be in the 27%?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And then on page 13 and I had a question. So on page 13 then, these numbers in the bottom right, so those are the same.
That's expressed a little different because that is the percentage of eighth graders who ultimately got a degree. So that captures the fact that we lose a lot of kids in high school.
Okay.
The numbers we've been studying is high school graduates then completing.
Okay. And then on page 14, when you talk about the cohort one, and that's 11%. So that is that 11 would be the same as the 27
yes.
on page 12? Okay.
Yes.
So that's saying these kids that we're impacting are
the ones that have been dragging
yeah,
it down.
Yeah, that's pulling the numbers down.
And so on page 12, that number of 27, is that every child in Dallas County? So that'd be all the ones in private schools?
Public schools. That's
just
public schools.
So it's not, it's just public
schools.
It's
not private because we don't have access to private data.
Okay. And then when we talk about, can you tell me a little bit difference of when you get these, how do you define it? When you're going, you're getting your degree simultaneously with your high school degree. The dual.
Sure.
What's it called?
They're in dual enrollment programs, meaning they're earning, they're in the same course. They're getting both high school credit and college credit.
And so they graduate from high school with
an associate's degree.
Are you finding there's any challenges? I thought I'd heard this and. Challenges to get into four-year colleges with that type of associate's degree. Do they count all those? I mean, I see that you're trying to get partnerships with some of the colleges, but
sure.
What about the UTs, the UTAs?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Texas does not have any transfer requirements at the university level. There's what they call the Common Core, which is 42 hours. However, many institutions will choose to accept it for credit, but not for the degree. So
okay.
This is not unique to the early. That's just simply
right.
a challenge in Texas. And many students will change their mind. They will be advised toward a certain program effort and then decide or at one college and then change their mind to go to another. For example, I can tell you of our students, 70% say they're going to go to the University of Texas at Austin, Texas A&M, or SMU. In reality, only a fraction will end up at those institutions. institutions because they don't take many transfer in, period. And there are certain schools they take zero into. So students end up losing some credit. We were working hard with our partners. That's one of the requirements for a university to be a part of the Dallas County Promise, is that they agree to accept those credits and count toward the degree.
Right.
So anyone a part of this, we can make that guarantee to.
So is there a difference in the dual credits and then a dual pathway? I mean, or is it just one when you get the degree and the other one you just maybe have some credits? Or
yeah, one of them we offer individual courses if we do have a couple of different agreements that are out there where we identify courses that high school students can take and the high school will agree to count them toward their high school graduation, even though that is not an early college high school or career academy. So those are agreements that we have in place. But it doesn't prevent a student who just simply wants to take college courses going outside the system to do that. But we try to encourage that. We've agreed to scholarship 100% of early college, high school, career academy, and dual enrollment students while they're still in high school to make that happen, and now hopefully extend that once they graduate as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Atkins.
Thank you. I guess some question that my concern is, number one, when you speak in about DISD and concern is you got one counselor per 300 students. How do your organization, how do DISD work together to make a difference? Because that is a huge difference until you get a 1 to 20 or 1 to 15 ratio. That's a big concern. So how are y'all working through that?
I think we were among many partners, for example, that were strong advocates for DISD giving voters the opportunity to have a tax ratification election to get more funding into our schools so that we could provide things like exactly like that. Not only the counselor ratio, which we just talked about, but also to support all students who want to get into the early college program and not just the half that we have slots for. This is a situation where Dallas ISD gets the same funding per pupil as Highland Park. Same funding per pupil, totally different challenges within each of those school districts. So it's up to the voters to decide, but it's up to the representatives to decide whether or not we can do that.
But that's what I'm hearing. But with your program here, it's up to the voters. But if we're trying to move this needle down the road, that is a big question mark. That is a huge
absolutely
problem.
It absolutely is. Absolutely.
And so that's something we need to address right now to find how we do that.
Right.
So I'm looking at statistics, I'm looking at what's going on, but that is a hurdle right today.
Funding is a hurdle.
Until you do that, how you get to the next
mm-hmm.
hurdle. So I think we need to keep our eyes on that, Mayor. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a major deal. And fill out an application, another the second thing. Tax return, that's very difficult, and some of the resident home have not filled out a tax return, have not done a tax return. To do that, and that's still going to DISD, going to the parents, going to the house, how do we educate them, bring them to some kind of workshop like Internal Revenue Service that say, hey, we'll do it for free, we'll go and help. That's another hurdle to get them to fill out the application, and how many applications get filled out and how many is not getting filled out because there are different hurdles. They cannot do it correctly. There's no one to help them. So how are we going to educate the parents and the student to go somewhere to say this is a free network to do the application? How are we going to – how you? I didn't see that, but that is a big hurdle.
Well, part of the thing is that's one of the reasons that any scholarship program needs to have a backbone entity that actually tracks the data, because the data will allow you to case manage every student. And so if the data tells you that there are certain high schools that we just have very low financial aid completion rates, then that's when you can mobilize resources to go to those specific schools based on the data. Keep in mind, this effort started in real earnest in April. We've
right.
been building the plane as we've been flying it. We've been building it pretty fast. But I think the long-term process is getting those pledge forms signed gives us access to the data to case manage every kid to understand what are the specific hurdles by child.
Yeah. I mean, in the past, we didn't know even who the student was unless they applied with us. Now we know who they are, and we're able to, through the Dallas County Promise, communicate with them on a weekly basis and tell their counselors and tell their principals and the superintendents and the parents where they are in that process, and then make the resources available to help them, because the resources are out there to help them with all of this. It's just that they haven't been taking advantage of it.
I see you really talking about ninth graders, but I don't hear you referring to K through eighth grade. Is that a void? Is that a reason why you're not elaborating on K through eighth grade? Because you're saying to get them college ready, but I think we lose a whole lot from K through eight.
I think we lose kids throughout the system.
I know, but I'm talking about K through 8. Now, I know through the whole system. I'm talking about that point right there, because that's very crucial. Because I remember when DISD, when my kids and when my wife was a teacher at DISD, she stopped teaching when my kids got into 8th grade. Mm-hmm. The reason why, because the 8th grade was going to the 9th grade, they felt they was not ready to be in the 9th grade with high school. So that's why I'm looking at that. Are we losing that from K through 8, the transition?
Well, we are certainly losing kids from the 8th to 9th grade transition, which is why trying to create early college programs in 9th grade and recruit in the 8th grade to make sure they're aware of that opportunity is important. But I guess all I'm asking for as best as possible is this is a Herculean effort that we're trying to take on.
Right.
Right. Right now we're just focusing on, to give you a sense, the number of seniors just in the 31 pilot high schools is greater than the high school population of 5 different states in the country.
It's a
huge challenge that we're trying to take on.
I agree with that. And I know before I left, Mara, I was on part of with DISD trustee and the city council working together, trying mm-hmm. to put DISD, the city, together, but I'm still looking at, and I know the mayor had a neighbor up. I know that we got DISD, you know, we got superintendent serving on the same board there, but we still got a bird trying to integrate
mm-hmm.
because we got DISD that we as a city council cannot control.
Mm-hmm.
You as a private sector trying to get into that, and the students and the people getting hurt is those students in that system that need help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to help them, we cannot just reach in there and put policy and put rules in there in order to help them. So that's a huge challenge right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to make sure that when we do that task, when we said 2030 or 2040, but we do have a major issue. And how do we address that issue? And I just want to put it out there. It's a huge issue with educating, you know, it's a crying shame that 4 or 5 years ago we didn't have a 4-year university in the state in the city of Dallas,
mm-hmm.
the 8th largest city mm-hmm. in America without a 4-year university. I mean, that's kind of crazy.
Right.
But also that you look at these high school, which page is that on the high school?
I think it was 14, maybe.
Yeah.
14.
I think so. Yeah.
The next page.
Yeah. Right. There you go. Yeah.
And you look at South Oak Cliff, Carla High School, I don't see Kilmer High School. Some of those high schools was the top-notch high school in the city. That was 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, they just fall back to the bottom. And that's because of a couple of things that the citizen, the resident moved out of the city of Dallas, moved to the suburb, and we left a big void of revenue, and now we're trying to how we attract the resident back around those schools.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at this, but we don't have a walkable neighborhood, a vibrant neighborhood, mm-hmm. a job create in the neighborhood,
right.
Then we're still going to have the same problem, because you cannot grow this education without turning the money inside the neighborhood more than one or two times. You got to be turned 3 or 4 or 5 times. So when we look at the MVA versus the North versus the South, then you see that the job is not there. I remember when TI workforce was almost 65% of their workforce live in the southern part of Dallas, but they're working in Richardson. So if we don't bring jobs back to the neighborhood and business back to the neighborhood, you still have the same problem. Mm-hmm. Because it's resource, you got to put a resource there, but you still got to have the family's value to make sure that kids is ready to go to college. And you still got to have a support around the neighborhood to support that student to go there, the mentor. Mm-hmm.
I think the first fundamental challenges we have is that we have to be making sure that every student is ready for post-secondary. Every student believes that post-secondary is affordable and accessible. Every student has a mentor to help figure that out. To me, those are just the fundamental things. And clearly, we've seen the demand coming from all the high schools around the region. How do I become a Dallas Promise High School? Right now, Kimball and Carter and South Oak Cliff are Promise High Schools. That's a clear marketing advantage for them versus other schools that they can actually offer that program. And so, but at the end of the day, you know, there's no silver bullet in this stuff. This is individual.
Well, and I understand that. And Mayor, and this is my last question, is number one, that we have a city council, and how do we all work together for the same goal? And can we be on the same page to try to help the education to get kids to college? You know, we got to be on the same goal. You got to be a leader. Mm-hmm. You got to make sure that we are marching the same beat, but we're not on the same goal and not marching the same beat. We still going to have a problem. It's a theory out there what we're going to do. We got the data. You know, we got statistics. We got all this here, but how do we put it together? And Mike, I guess that you bringing this to us right here, but I still want to see what do the city of Dallas and what the council, what is our role? You know, and I'd be glad, you know, hope you answer that question. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor, for the opportunity. Chancellor, thank you for what you're doing. And Mr. Williams, thank you. And really appreciate what you're doing in District 5 in Southeast Dallas. You know, that's a real game changer for us. And you can see, you know, with the graphic up there, Samuel High School, 99%, you know, disadvantaged.
Right.
Those are the challenges, you know, the obstacles that we're faced with. But Spruce and Samuel particularly are really inuring a great benefit from that and greatly appreciate that. Ms. Gates asked a question about those that are not attending those schools. I'm assuming that charters and privates still have an opportunity for the Rising Star.
Oh, absolutely. Well. You know, that program's not changing at all. And in fact, while we used to have a cap on the number, we no longer even have a cap on the number. We're fortunate that we can serve every student that wants to. Now, we do have for Rising Star, there is a great point average requirement coming out of high school. But we're even taking a hard look at that going forward. But the bottom line is, if they've made a decision to go to college, we want to support them no matter where they are. But what we're looking at with the Dallas County Promise is we're trying to change the minds of people who aren't deciding to go to college, people who really didn't see this as an option. So we're going to take care of the ones that were already out there that are. But now it's really how do we change the minds of folks who didn't see this as a possibility.
I think the Rising Star program is a great concept. I know I was on the very ground floor of that, you know, with Eastfield when they first decided to come to the community, even leased them their first space. So I know from the very get-go, you know, when that happened. So I think that was great. Now we've seen that morph into Eastfield College, Pleasant Grove. Mr. Atkins mentioned, you know, a potential job creation. You know, that's always been the idea of a university. You know, for instance, UT Dallas, when it developed, it was really a cotton field, you know, and the Agricultural Extension Service was there. Now you're starting to see the mushroom of high-tech and communications jobs, telecom-type jobs. I hope to see also the surrounding these community college districts, you know, if they become these job training centers, I think then that can greatly affect, you know, the future jobs there. Hopefully that once they start seeing this skill training developed, then they'll want to have job centers there because it just makes good sense. We're also blessed. We got some good news recently in Pleasant Grove, just up the street from Eastfield College, Pleasant Grove Workforce Solutions are taking over the old Pleasant Grove Library.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're
going
to
be involved in, you know, 30-plus skill trainings there. So I hope that we'll have that collaborative interaction between the college district and Cedar Valley as well as you know, East Hill College, Pleasant Grove, along with them.
Absolutely. No, that's important. And certainly some of that's not part of the College Promise, but part of our ongoing efforts that we're working right now with virtually every community in terms of a broader master plan that we'll be looking at probably going to the voters on to address some of the shortfall that we see in many of the communities that we're serving. And I will say this, it was really a lot of the students in Pleasant Grove that helped me realize that the transportation barrier and why we pursued the getting a DART pass for every student as I listened to their plight. Even though they were close to Eastville, they couldn't get there. They could get to El Centro and other places earlier. So we're going to be paying attention and looking at how we can be part of making all of our communities more successful.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, try to reduce or eliminate the barriers to that education, whatever they are. You know, we could all make excuses for them. Well, you know, they can't do this, can't do that, they don't have enough desire. But let's take those excuses out to the extent that we can. When we really get these skill certifications, I think it goes without saying that many of these people can double their income. Let's say if they're making $7, $8, $9, $10 an hour, once they get to that skill certification level, that can mean $15, $17, $20 an hour just for those keeping score at home. You know, $20 an hour is $40,000 a year. Husband and wife both get certifications, that could be $80,000 a year.
Absolutely.
That's a big game changer. Now they got a house and a couple of cars and can buy furniture, and they can really begin to move forward towards that American dream that, you know, that we all have just taken for granted, really, over the last half century. Let's see if I got something. I just want, I guess, in closing, to say, you know, the skill training, it does lead, you know, to a bona fide, marketable skill. You know, too many kids that come out with, you know, pretty much a liberal arts education, and that has served a lot of us well through the years, just that ability to think, you know, critically. But to have that actual certification, then go to work, and some of those will take that six-month certificate, and later they may, it may lead them into a dead-end corner, and then they may say, you know, I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to get a little extra. I'm going to get my associates, or I'm going to go ahead and reach out and try to get that bachelor. So it gives them at least a launching pad. It puts money in their pocket, so then that the possibilities, that their universe of possibilities, are greatly enhanced as a result of that.
Yeah, and mentioning that, I might just ask that when you have the opportunity talking to members of Congress, a bill was filed last week, which we think has a real good chance of going forward, related to higher education, that would allow Pell Grants to go with programs as low as 300 hours. That's 6 months. Right now they have to be a year in length before a student can get the Pell Grant. So this would be a game changer as well, because many of the six-month programs lead to great-paying jobs in our community. Many on that list that you saw earlier is the shortage. So we're going to be looking for allies to make sure that that stays in place and goes forward.
One thing that was probably not mentioned, and I know you know this because we've talked about it before, but these jobs like welding and auto technology, a lot of these guys are getting in their 50s, or even the ladies that are doing these jobs. In the next 10 years, we're going to have a massive turnover.
Right.
Somebody's got to do those jobs, perform those tasks.
Right.
So it's incumbent upon us to find people to put into those slots.
Absolutely.
To take their place, because otherwise there's going to be a huge deficit there.
I mean, you look at American Airlines, their maintenance staff are upper 50s and on average. So we're going to see a lot of turnover and a lot of people transitioning out of some of those fields.
One final thing is that I don't know if you have a representative to the Financial Inclusion Roundtable that's hosted by the United Way. They meet every couple of months at the United Way headquarters, and it would be great if you could provide somebody regarding this to be that voice, you know, to let us know about what we're doing. We're really engaged with, you know, the FDIC, the Federal Reserve Board, many of the local banks, you know, Bank on Dallas, trying to make sure that we financial literacy, you know, is taught, make sure that we're pushing EITC and VITA and some of these other programs to make sure we can lift people out of poverty.
That's great.
But one of the fastest ways is clearly going to be these skill training that's going to give them the money
that can give them independent decision-making. And I've asked my colleagues, Mr. Thomas, Mr. Clayton, to come and join us. February 13th is our very next meeting. But we need, Mayor, we need to really get involved in what the Financial Inclusion Roundtable is doing, because that can make a huge difference. We need to bring the, you know, the workforce training and the mayor's anti-poverty groups together so we can all be in on that, what we're trying to accomplish there. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I just really quick just want to publicly thank Chancellor May. I never got to thank you for saving the Sanford Brown program. It was a dental hygiene program in District 2. It was a college, and it was going to close. And it was a great program. They also helped the community. And I went to Chancellor May and asked him if he can take a look and try to save this program. And now it's the El Centro Dental Hygiene Program. So I want to thank you publicly for that.
You're welcome.
And I know it was a lot of work, and I just wanted to thank you.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing it to my attention. That's a very important program, and it is doing incredibly well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Second round, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be brief. Dr. Israel Cadero has been texting me. He's listening. He's done a great job. For those who haven't had a chance to meet with him, he's heading up the early college high school initiative, and he updated me. I think he said 58. I could be wrong. Partners, but my colleagues, what they've been able to do with early college high schools and getting these corporate partners, and I know City of Dallas also is one, has been tremendous, because this allows these young people to get exposed to mentors who are in some of the fields that they're interested in going into. So I wanted to speak about that. And also I want to thank both of you for volunteering to be on the panel for the community town hall meeting I'm going to have early next year about how we can bridge this gap. There's a huge gap in terms of what educators are saying the kids need to know, and then what industry is requiring. There's a huge gap that exists, and we've got to have conversations, critical conversations about how we can bridge this gap. And I thank both of you for your commitment to do that. I know, you know, you're both very busy and being pulled everywhere left and right, but I think and I'm calling it a roadshow. It's got to be a way to have a Dallas County Promise roadshow. So who with community college, who would commit, would be a point person as we begin to take this show on the road? Because there are a lot of people who are not listening, who won't come to a community meeting, but will come to a neighborhood association meeting or something of that nature to get the PTA meeting, things of that nature, to get this information. So who could we get in contact with?
I'll forward it to you, Councilman Thomas.
Right.
And I think also we've been talking about we should do it is make a short video of what's happening here as a way for people to spread it through social media, et cetera, as well as just at those meetings as well. I just want to say one thing. I spent a lot of time running around the state of Texas looking at what other major urban regions are doing about this problem, and there is no district that has done what Dallas ISD has done in terms of making almost every single high school having an early college program, and there is no community college system that is doing the things that Dr. May is doing in this state, and we're leading, and the most important thing to think about is the ratio between Pell Grants and the affordability of our community college tuition, and therefore the ability for kids to access, is the same in Tarrant County, in Harris County, in El Paso County, and San Antonio. So if we can figure out a way to do this well, I think it's going to have a ripple effect through the entire state.
Dr. May.
Thank you.
What about community college? Who would be a good point person?
Oh, the same person.
I'll take care of it.
And I might just acknowledge that it's our foundation, the Dallas County Community College District Foundation, that's actually underwriting the cost for commit to make this happen. So this is a real partnership.
Excellent. And, you know, anybody that's listening, I think it's critical. What's been said is, especially for first-generation college students, filling out these forms are very difficult. You know, fortunately, my father went to college, so they were able to help me. But there's a lot of young people who fall into these categories who qualify for this type of funding. If you have a nonprofit organization and you're looking for something to do, or if you're in this lane, please contact our offices. Let us know, because we want to be able to make sure that our constituents have that information and have individuals who can help them to kind of navigate through this, you know, the paperwork
in order to qualify more of our young people to be able to get these type of funding so they can go to college for free. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thanks, Mayor. I forgot to ask this earlier. You mentioned that the STAR program has requirements. Why did you decide with Dallas Promise to not have requirements?
Well, because, we're working with these high schools to get every student college ready. We want to be able to make that opportunity, but we also want the school to commit that they're going to be helping students get into college, not just graduate from high school.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Felder.
Yes, just a couple of quick things. Can you talk about the success rate of the program in terms of hiring by different corporations?
You know, we're early in that, but I will say, and probably Israel Cordero with DISD would be a better person to ask the question for. But what we require of partners, this is not just advisory. This is that they will serve as mentors, that they will inform the curriculum, and that they will make internship opportunities available. They don't guarantee jobs at the end of it, but certainly we're creating the pathway for the job. So the employer piece is absolutely critical here so that they're engaged early on at the coming out of at the ninth grade level, not just when they complete college or which they're all going to need some post-secondary credential, so that we're getting them engaged much earlier in those conversations.
Okay, and can you talk about the different companies that have already signed on?
It's pretty well who's who. I mean, we probably if it's everyone.
You don't want the slides so we can see it.
No, I have a copy. I can.
Okay, please give me a copy.
We have that slide, but it's everyone you would think, from the city of Dallas to most of the hospitals, to most of the banks and financial companies, Texas Instruments, American Airlines, Southwest Airlines. It's a very comprehensive list.
Okay, last point I'd like to make, Mayor. We're in a boom time in the city of Dallas. We've got the bond has passed for all propositions. There's millions of dollars flowing through the city of Dallas right now, or getting ready to flow. There's going to be millions of dollars in construction. We have to get those trades, you know, because what happens is in the past, you know, you have a bond, and the communities that need the employment are bypassed. And so we have to change that paradigm. And that's why I was focusing on the skilled trades, because if you think about it, what's going to be happening at Fair Park? If you think about it, what's going to be happening at the Mill Creek Tunnel? If you think about it, let's talk about all of the homes that are going to be built. We have to make sure that the people that live in those communities get those opportunities and get those jobs. And so that's where I'm going with this, Mayor. I think we really need to focus on the skilled trades. I mean, look at the highways. Look at the dead man's curve. I mean, these sorts of things, these are high-paying jobs, and I want to make sure that the community that you're building in, that the contractors are building in, hire from those communities. And so that's why I'm pushing, I think, the formerly incarcerated. I think some of the homeless. Is Nadia in the room? Is she in the room? Hi, Nadia. Stand up for a second. I have an ask. Just a quick ask. I know that when you guys do the cleanup, you give a bundle of services. I'm going to ask that you would include this as one of the bundle of services that you offer to the homeless underneath the bridge, because they don't have. No one is giving them this information. And so if that's all right with you guys, that you would recommend some people to the program, is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Mr. Williams?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Felder. Thank you to the council. Thank you, Mr. May and Mr. Williams, for your time. I'm excited about seeing how passionate you all are about this, because there's no question long term, this is the issue that we're going to face as a city. Now, I did this not only to let everybody talk and ask questions, but you guys need to go to work, okay? Every time you have a community event with kids, you need to ask. What do they need to do? Have you taken the pledge? Right?
That's right.
They need to be taking the pledge. So from, you know, East Dallas to far southern Dallas to West Dallas, that's the question, because we've got to get these kids signed up. Our job is cheerleaders on this, and we're out there as much as anybody, and that's why I wanted to do it. Thank you so much. With that, we'll take the next item. And we've got a vote. Go ahead. While we get the vote, Mr. Caraway wanted to just recognize some folks that were downstairs.
Yeah. Let me just say, go ahead and proceed with why don't we let you proceed?
Okay.
Okay. So we'll move back to agenda item two, which is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. A ballot vote is needed for the appointment of a member to position two of the Ethics Advisory Commission, as two nominees have been nominated to the position. Staff is distributing ballots now. The nominees are Scott Shirley, is being nominated by Councilmember Griggs, and Donna L. Wigley is being nominated by Councilmember Clayton.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. And while we're going through that, earlier this morning we talked about the motorcycles, and the motorcycles were here. They were downstairs and you know, in the parking. And I ask you all to please stand, the Gladiators and the Classic Riders. We certainly appreciated everything that you all have done and that you've done, Mr. Butcher, as it relates to our Thanksgiving basket of hope. We showed the video this morning. We recognized you guys. Unfortunately, you all wear so much stuff coming through security, kind of held you up a little bit as well. We want to just say thank you, Lydia. We're not going to stand and take a picture. We're going to take a picture right there. So get the picture while you're there, while we go back to council business. We want you all to know we appreciate you all and your wives and everyone all worked with us with the Thanksgiving turkey giveaway. So thank you so much.
Yeah. With that, we will take up item B. You go ahead, please, Kim.
The radio system replacement project item is item number B. This briefing will provide information on the city's latest efforts towards modernizing the citywide communication system. The primary goal of the City of Dallas's radio communication system is to provide highly efficient, effective, and interoperable public safety for city and county law enforcement, fire, EMS agencies, and other non-emergency departments for the citizens they serve. The City of Dallas departments rely on two-way radios for effective communications throughout the city. This item is actually on the December 13, 2017 voting agenda. Staff is also passing out a memorandum to give you the highlights of the MWPE participation on this item in advance of next week's voting. We will, at this time, turn it over to Jody Puckett, Assistant City Manager. Jody will introduce the team before you, and we will begin the briefing. Thank you.
And I've been assured, Ms. Puckett, that 15 minutes. Thank you.
Oh, gosh, I thought our goal was 10.
Good, I like it. Thank you.
Good morning. We're excited to be before you today. Of course, Kim mentioned our items next week, but phase three of a very important public safety radio system, and our colleagues here to my left are going to be the big benefactors of that system going forward. So I asked Bill to go through our briefing right quick, and we'll close in hopefully 10 minutes and hear questions. Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. Bill Finch, Chief Information Officer. So today's presentation, is, as Jody mentioned, is about our last and final phase for this very important radio communication network. So we'll jump right into cover a little bit of the background here on page three. Our current system was designed over 40 years ago. It's been about 20 years since we went through any major technology upgrades of that. And we've conducted a vulnerability assessment, and you can kind of see the points there, that the highlights of that assessment, and why we need to make this change. Page five, cover some of the key improvements that we expect to receive with this, better in security and encrypted communications, improvements in interoperability between different radio systems and agencies that help and support us, and some enabling of some GPS technology. The location services will also improve the security of our first responders once they leave a vehicle and have this radio still with them. Page six, obviously that's kind of a, that's an overview. We've covered, we've done this in phases. Phase one was the replacement of the radio systems and the transition to a narrowband frequency. Phase two, we also completed, which was a microwave network communication system. All these are part of this overall system. And now we're at phase three, which is the radio system itself, the receivers and transmitters. I'll skip pages 7 and 8 and jump right into 3, which again is our final step to this radio network upgrade, which is to replace a lot of the old and unsupported radio system equipment and achieve a 100% compliance with the Project 25 public safety standards. Page 10 is our timeline. We've kind of got a plan and an actual that we're tracking to. We're about 6 months extended from our plan versus our actual. That was contributed to the additional time that we spent and invested in the technical evaluation process. Page 11 covers our evaluation criteria. Important piece here is 55% of those points were focused on the vendor's capability and the functional and technical match to our needs. Page 12 covers the evaluation team members, quite a few we had with that. I also want to thank the county for being here also today and represented. They were a big, big part of this. Page 13 covers the process itself, the various system design proposals, the best and final offers that were submitted. You can see the scores of the two vendors that did bid on this, and that our business and inclusion development goal for this kind of acquisition is 23%. Motorola, the selected vendor, achieved a 27.59%. Page 14 covers our cost and funding of this total system. It's kind of described in four parts as it's laid out on this slide and reflects the city and the county's funding contributions. Slide 22 at the end of this presentation. In the appendix provides a more detailed year-by-year financing breakdown of this. So the radio system itself is the hardware, software, and installation. It's about $48 million. The system maintenance is 15 years, about $10.5 million. Also want to point out in that system maintenance, any time during that 15 years, this technology that we're putting in that goes end of life would be replaced as part of this, so we would not be back with millions of dollars of additional request. Then we have a master agreement for radios, which is 5 years, and then the implementation services, which are some special engineers that will help us in the deployment and execution of this. Let's see, we'll skip slides 15 and 16. We've got time?
Yeah.
All right. 15 and 16, those particular slides kind of talk about the capacity that we're building in this. We'll also be able to support additional subscribers outside of the county and the city of Dallas. There's a particular slide in the appendix on page 20 that covers the number of cities that are not running on the latest Project 25 standards and those that are. We would anticipate somewhere around 1,700 to 2,000 additional subscribers could be added to this that could help also in paying for this particular new network. So, and then 17, our recommendation would be that the City Council approve the three agenda items that we have scheduled for the 13th for the purchase, installation, and maintenance of this contract. One is the Motorola Solutions, Inc. contract itself. The other one is the Dallas County Interlocal Agreement and the Black and Veatch contract for the professional services. Again, I'd like to thank the county, and obviously they I was at their meeting yesterday, and they approved their item for this. So, any questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Felder.
Yes, Jody, I was looking for that slide that we discussed.
Well, Miss Tolbert went up to me. She sent a memo out. So that's the memo she passed out today that shows the MWBE participation for the radio system project. So.
Okay. So just to reiterate, you know, that's I'm going to be looking for my MWBE numbers on all presentations, you know, going forward to be included in the presentation.
So, Councilmember, that's probably not something we're going to do. And so I appreciate the request. I think we specifically did it in a memo one because it wasn't in there. I think it's typically in there. Mm-hmm. But in this case, we did not do it because we had already mailed and sent out the correspondence. But if that's something we traditionally do, we'll do it. I'd love to discuss the habit of us having to prepare the actual PowerPoints and put them in that initial briefing material as well, because it's kind of difficult as things change to be current. And PowerPoints historically are there to highlight what is provided in the written material to send it down. So, but again, I think we'll do traditionally what we've done. I think we have included that in the past. Mm-hmm. And so if we've done that in a limited form, we'll continue to do that. Just don't
right. That's what I'm saying. It's been there before, but it's not there now.
Thank you. Mr. Kingston.
What is the effect on officer or firefighter safety of the new radios?
Actually, it's a better safety. It's much more dependable. It's a digital system. It's 800 megahertz. What it does is it allows the interoperability for us to be able to communicate with all agencies, state, local, and federal surrounding us. If there is an incident, a critical incident, we're able to instantly switch to one channel where we're all able to communicate. And so that, in essence, creates a more safety comfortable area for us as a department, because now we can communicate with individuals, we can let them know what our needs are, and then we can work collectively together.
Am I correct that our current system performs poorly inside buildings?
The current system does. And this system, it's digital. There are some challenges in that space. However, there is technology that is built into it to allow us to be able to communicate through that challenge. And also, this 800 megahertz has a greater distance. So oftentimes, with the current radios, if you go to a certain point outside of your substation, district, or through the city, there's a loss of communication. And with this digital system, that does not exist.
And am I understanding correctly that the system is smaller and easier for officers and firefighters to carry?
Absolutely.
Sounds like a winning pitch. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins.
Kind of follow up from Mr. Kingston. I guess maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years ago when Motorola came up here to pick that system, I think we spoke to the past chief and the past firefighter. The fire chief, and it said the reason why we're going with the system, because if they was in a building, this was the best system to have. Is that a fair statement?
It is. There's a lot of advantages to the system that Chief Hall pointed out, and the capabilities of talk around. So in building systems, it's one of the sub features of the program.
Right.
Actually provides us better and safer communications on the fire ground in building systems.
So is this the same system we upgrading, or is this a different system?
I'm not familiar with what the original system
was. I mean, the one we had when I was here. I'm trying to follow up on Mr. Kingston. I don't know if it's the same one, or we got a different, or we added to this.
Oh, this is a different system than the current one we're using, if that's what you're asking.
It's a different case. So what is the difference?
The main difference is the banding of the radio banding. I would let Bill Finch actually talk to that.
Please. Yes, to your point, when the former chiefs were here speaking on this, this was when we were purchasing our radio devices. That was phase one. Motorola won that particular competitive bid, and all along the way we've known that this was coming after that, so this is a replacement. What we're presenting to you today is a replacement for our legacy analog system that we're running today that the new radios actually operate on.
Okay, and we were trying to integrate with other cities to be on the same channel So this system will integrate with the other cities.
Yes, sir, much more seamlessly than the way we have to do it today.
Okay. So when would this go online? Would this automatic go as a phase to get there?
It is a. It takes about, we're estimating about 30 months to construct this network and replace it.
So when you said 30 months, could you elaborate on what happened in the first 6 months to 12 months? How did we get there?
Okay. What we go through first round is what we define as a detailed design review. We go in, we look at buildings, locations of where the towers are, where we may need additional connectivity. Then the system actually, from there, now you have a very detailed specification of what kind of equipment and technology that you're going to need from Motorola. They will actually build this in their factory. Then we will go to that factory. They will demonstrate it being constructed there. We'll approve that. Then they will begin purchasing all of the parts and pieces, ship it to Dallas, and then the implementation on a site-by-site basis will start taking place.
Okay. I just would like to have, on a firm belief in timeline, when you put it there, I would love to have a timeline. So we're talking about a $64 million product, that type of money. We should deserve a timeline when it will get in place at 40%, 50%, 100%, so right. We know when they get there. Right. And so that timeline would run concurrent with the other cities also?
This would network today is the city of Dallas's network. So we are partnering with the county, and we do already have a timeline because our expectation is to get started sort of the day after New Year's. And we have about 115-page detailed project timeline already built step by step on
and
30 months.
When you said the county, we refer to just one county, just Dallas
County. Dallas County.
So what about the other counties around? Are we in the future, or will we be able
to? As I pointed out,
we always talk about region. I think the mayor always said, here's a region. And that Tarrant County, we're talking about a region, but Tarrant County is not in this region. Right now it's not. But we always talk about regional connection. I think when we sell the city of Dallas, we always say, here's the region, so therefore, I think that we should be trying to sell the whole region as a whole, because we're always talking about trying to sell the region.
Right, and we talk with many, many cities and counties, those that already have a Project 25 standard radio system, and now they know that we're in the process of hopefully getting this approved and can start our construction, and through Dallas, Tarrant, Collin, Denton, counties to the south, counties to the east of us.
But the reason why
cities.
I say that in a disaster, what happens,
yes.
Yes. So we do have something, hope God we never have one, but
right.
Just in case we do, how do we communicate? And that's very important, trying to communicate in the region. We should have the capacity to do that. So.
And this system will, as Chief Hall mentioned earlier, the ability to be interoperable with other cities, agencies, at the state, federal, county, and other municipal levels will all work seamlessly with this kind of technology.
I think what Bill is saying is some of the counties already have the new system.
Okay.
And we're kind of late coming on. Not everybody has it, but most of them already have this system. So when we get it, we will be much more in line to be able to communicate.
Okay.
Also, for the systems that exist out there that aren't the type of 800 megahertz systems, although it's a little clunky at times, we do have the ability to have interoperable communications with other agencies around us. There's just some processes we have to put into place for us to go there, and it's more our processes internally to make it work, but we have the ability to communicate with other agencies around us.
Okay. But, I guess my main concern is, number one, we're not more of a state of Dallas. We are more of a region now, and when some do have a disaster, we should be able to, especially when a safety issue comes, the cross line to be able to communicate through the whole region. So I try to make sure we're on the same page and trying to upgrade to get there and come back to the city council and say, here's the timeline, here's the other counties around us that we cannot merge with as a faster pace, but we can go off to another challenge to get in contact with that. But I think the information that I would love to get back with me on, I don't know my other colleagues, but we are a region city. And when we go outside of the country, we always say, here is a region. When I Dallas Chamber say we sell as a region, so I'll try to make sure we're online looking at the whole region.
And Mr. Atkins, we are. Dallas is the regional hub for interoperability with radios today. It was, I think, somewhere in the 2010, maybe 2012 timeframe.
Right.
A lot of the communities came together. We applied for a grant. We acquired a piece of technology that allowed, and Dallas was chosen to sort of host that technology.
Right.
So that other cities that weren't even at this P25 state, we could begin to do some of that interoperability. This is just another step toward basically eliminating a box, a piece of technology that's no longer going to be needed to do that.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I'll be brief. I just want to make sure that there's going to be, you know, extra parts and integration and add-on, and that this will be a good system for us for about 10, 20 years, you know. So do you have that feel about this, both of you? Anybody?
Well, they have the details on the parts, but this is the system to move us forward for multiple decades. This is an exceptional system. It works very well in all the other agencies, interoperable with regional facilities. So this is the direction for us to move.
So you think probably a 20-year plan and 25 years or more?
I would suggest that, yes.
So the towers that you currently have, those can be utilized, you know, with this equipment, just to be retrofitted, you think, current towers?
The current towers themselves, the steel structures are fine from that standpoint. We'll obviously replace some antennas that are on those towers and add some things to them.
Sure.
There will be some need to put some smaller poles, we'll call them monopoles, up to cover some areas where there's gaps today. As Chief Coatney said, this is a very good system. We have a 15-year maintenance agreement, so should any of the technology become end of life, then the maintenance agreement itself will kick in and we'll get the equipment replaced. And then, obviously, after the 15 years, we will make a decision to renew those kinds of things to continue because it is a 20, 25-year decision.
So there'll be add-on towers, probably maybe even elevation and height on some of these towers, potentially.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Elevation and height?
Yes, there's certainly those things, and part of the detailed design review and some of the work that's already been done to get to this point has already determined where potentially some of those places might be and what's the height of that antenna.
I know that we're going into the Great Trinity Forest. I know that's got to be part of this discussion because we've got to go police and send our firefighters down into that corridor because there's going to be people hiking and biking and jogging and golfing, and I don't know what all will be done over there. But anyway, we need to be able to have constant communication with patrols.
We have the design of the system has a very, very good and strong propagation throughout the entire county and outside of our county borders.
Is this going to be built in Fort Worth at Motorola headquarters?
My understanding is it'll probably be Schaumburg is where they will build the initial design so that we test, which is their engineering factory, and then they will bring it here and go through the detailed construction and build out.
So you think 30 months, is that about right as far as
that's
operation?
What they're recommending there.
You think the completion timeline would be 30 months?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, as long as you're happy. Yeah, I'm happy.
Okay. Well, let me think about it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Ms. Johnson, results of our vote, and we have one speaker before we go into executive session, so we won't make that person come back.
That's correct. The result of the ballot vote is as follows. Mr. Scott Shirley has been appointed by acclamation to position 2 of the Ethics Advisory Commission as he received majority vote. We'll now move to our end of meeting open microphone speaker session. We do have one speaker, Ms. Wanda Summers. Ms. Summers, you may come forward. I'll recite the speaker guidelines. Speakers must observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any speaker making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who becomes boisterous shall be removed from the room. You will be given 3 minutes to speak.
You notice the time at the monitor in front of you. When your time is up, please stop and address your comments to Mayor Rawlings only. You may begin.
My name is Wanda Summers. I work at 2317 East 11th Street. And, Mr. Rawlings, my problem is...
Is your mic on?
I don't think so.
There we go. Just move it down close to your mouth. There we go. Thank you.
Okay. I'm a past city employee. I have been called over-passionate about my job. Some of you I know, Dwayne Tunnell, I've known for forever. I don't think you can be too passionate about your job, and I don't think I'm too passionate about my city, which is Dallas. But here's my problem, Mr. Mayor, is that when I call, I get no service. I'm holding a card that I received, that I signed many years ago, long before you came, that I would commit to quality customer service as a city employee. When I call up here and I ask for an appointment to speak to someone, I never get it. Not only do I not get it, I don't get a call back. How do I get a hold of my council person? You can ask him. Dwayne, I come to your house, do I not? I do. Here's my other problem, is that we have directors of departments who are not accountable. Just plain not accountable. I have a problem. I'm working on a situation in our community. I was at the Zoning and Planning Committee, and one of your employees just out and out lied. When the board asked her, has the city ever done anything with residential property? She said, absolutely not. Dwayne and I pass it every day. It's called Cadillac Heights. Yes, we have. I called the code enforcement officer, asked him to look at something. The case was closed in 6 minutes from the time it was created on 311 to the time he closed it. Now, look, they called me Wonder Woman back in the day, and I couldn't do one in 6 minutes. The director of code enforcement, I've tried to contact him and make an appointment, never returns a phone call. I have a code enforcement officer that told me that if I wanted to know what he did on a case, I could just come down here and ask for an open records request. Now, that is not customer service. I don't know what y'all call it, but I don't call that customer service. Mr. Atkins, we are bringing a business into your community that will bring over 30 jobs.
Ma'am, speak to me. Yep.
Okay, but I can't get in to talk to you, my council person, about that because no one returns phone calls. The only one who's returned my phone calls lately has been the city secretary's office, and I talked to them 3 times this morning. I walked off of taking care of a 90-year-old man to make sure that I got here so that I could speak before you and ask you to please do something about the quality of customer service in the city of Dallas and the accountability of some of your departments. But I do want to brag on your sewer department. Mr. Peoples does one of the most exemplary jobs, that he takes care of a problem within an hour of the time you call him.
Thank you, Ms. Summers. Thank you.
This concludes your speakers.
Thank you. It is 11:49 a.m. on December 6, 2017. The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described in the agenda: Candy Renee Stone v. City of Dallas, Terry Morris v. Christopher Hess, and Lauren C. Reichhart v. City of Dallas. Thank you.
Council, we're finished with executive session. We're now reopened for regular session at 12:15. We're on the air at 12:16. This meeting is officially adjourned. All right. At 12:16, we are adjourned.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go back and do the show.